Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA show!
Back in your life on this Monday, July 22nd, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program. Hope you had a lovely weekend. If you live in the United States, I hope you're okay. That was a hot one. If I'm being honest, I enjoy a weekend like that much more than a weekend in, say, January or February. I like it hot. I love it. Give me 110. I don't care. I want to sweat all day long. So it was fun. I enjoyed it. The heart of summer, if you will. And I have to say, I'm in a tremendous mood on this Monday afternoon because I've been engaged with some people on the Twitter and the Instagram today talking about steak, well-done steak, rare steak, people getting all up in arms about the way I like my steak. I like it with ketchup. I like to douse it with ketchup. I think, look, I'm having a little fun here, but I just think it's so funny that people get so worked up over the way they eat. Like, it's such a commentary on humanity. Who cares? I don't care how you eat your steak. I couldn't care less. Why do you care about me? Why is it like such a badge of honor the way you eat your steak, if it's well done or not? It is so funny to me, and I just like to mess with people like that. So I'm having a great time. I'm in a great mood today because of this. It just happened like 30 minutes ago. If you're listening to this after the fact, you probably have no idea what I'm talking about, but rest assured, it's a great way to start your afternoon talking about well-done steak and riling people up. So we have a lot to talk about today, my friends. Of course, we're coming off UFC San Antonio. Leon Edwards has now won 8 in a row, second longest active winning streak at 170 pounds, and yet it seems like he's nowhere in the title talks. Doesn't even seem like he's in the Jorge Masvidal talks. We'll talk to him about that later in the show, and I'll also weigh in as well. Of course, on that card also was the return of Greg Hardy. He defeats Juan Adams. Juan Adams talked a lot. He poked the bear. He criticized Greg Hardy a lot, and in the end, didn't put up much of a fight, held on to that single leg, absorbed like 30-something punches, and the referee had to stop the fight. It was the right call. It was a relatively underwhelming fight card, if I'm being honest, but how about Dan Hooker with a great win? How about Walt Harris with a finish as well? 62 seconds he has lasted in the octagon in his last two fights. He's really come into his own. So a little bit to talk about from San Antonio, and then, of course, we now start to turn our attention towards Edmonton this weekend, UFC 240, Max Holloway, Frankie Edgar. Also, we've got a very special celebrity guest on today's show. But before we get to all that, a bit of breaking news, if you will, a few hours old. Just wanted to quickly provide an update on John Jones for those that may have missed it. This is according to Mark Ramondi of ESPN. Quote, UFC champion John Jones is facing a battery charge stemming from an alleged April incident in Albuquerque, New Mexico. ESPN confirmed Monday. Jones, who holds the UFC light heavyweight title, is accused of slapping a cocktail waitress in her genital area at a strip club, pulling her down to his lap and kissing her neck, according to the criminal summons obtained by ESPN from the Albuquerque Police Department. KRQE Television in Albuquerque was the first to report the news. The woman told the Albuquerque police that Jones put her in a chokehold and picked her up off the ground, per the news station. When she asked Jones to stop, she said Jones continued touching her until he decided to leave. The charge was listed in court records as a petty misdemeanor, but a conviction can still carry jail time. You can read the rest of that on ESPN.com right now. So perhaps more hot water for John Jones, as it seemed like he was maybe turning things around. A very unfortunate incident. We'll see how it all plays out. He did go on Twitter this morning, and he tweeted that he was, quote, definitely not in any trouble, end quote, and also quoted, also tweeted, quote, don't be so quick to believe everything you read on the internet, end quote. So that was John Jones weighing in. I did reach out to his management team. They declined comment. His lawyer spoke about it as well. And we'll see what happens. This is the lawyer statement. Today, the media told Mr. Jones about a false accusation launched against John Jones, and that paperwork had been sent to an incorrect address. However, after receiving the documents from the press, Mr. Jones immediately went to pay the small fee, and he and multiple witnesses stand ready to factually refute the malicious lies being told about him to the public, end quote. Again, you can read more about this on ESPN.com right now. That's the latest on John Jones. We'll see how it all plays out again. It has been relatively quiet for Jones stemming from the Gustafson fight, but perhaps here we go again, although people close to him don't seem to think that this will become the huge story that some of his other indiscretions have become. Let me run down today's lineup, and then we shall get to our first guest of the day. I'm looking forward to talking to him. It's his first time on the program. As I said, Dan Hooker was victorious on Saturday, had a great win over James Vick. And this is also the first time that Dan Hooker will be on the program. The pride of New Zealand. I was curious to see how Dan Hooker would respond coming off his loss to Edson Barbosa back in December. And he responded phenomenally well. He knocked out James Vick. In fact, he was the one that broke that streak of decisions that was becoming a record. It had become the most consecutive decisions, but it was going to become the most ever decisions on a card. But he broke that. And a great win at a great time on the card. And now we wonder what's next for Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker did a phenomenal job in that fight, but he did an even better job, I thought, after the fight, getting on the microphone and saying, anyone who wants to fight me October 5th, most likely in Australia, as my buddy, my teammate, my fellow soldier, Israel Adesanya, is going to be fighting on that card against Robert Whittaker, sign up right here, right now. And there's Ally Quinta signing up on Twitter the next day. I'd love to see that fight. That'd be a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to talking to Dan Hooker later on today. We'll also talk to Felicia Spencer, who meets Chris Cyborg at UFC 240 on Saturday in Edmonton, a potential number one contender fight at 145 pounds. This is a big step up for Felicia Spencer, who is 1-0 in the UFC, of course, had that solid win over Megan Anderson back in May, former Invicta FC featherweight champion, one of the few true featherweights in our sport. And some might argue that this is a little too soon. You'll recall the last time we had her on the show, and that was the first time, we asked her about whether or not she'd be interested in fighting Chris Cyborg. And, you know, she kind of said, you know, the money has to be right, all that stuff and more. Well, we'll find out if the money was right. Michael Bisping will join us at around 3:05. He has a new book coming out this week called Quitters Never Win. Looking forward to talking to him. It's been over a year since we've had Mike on the show. And of course, he was just inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame. It's always fun when he's on the program. How about Steve-O of Jackass and Wild Boys fame? A huge MMA fan going to join us at around 2:45. I can't wait to talk to Steve-O. Great guy. Big fan. Was hanging out with Jorge Masvidal last week. Yes, Steve-O himself will be on the program. Yoani and Jacek is returning on October 12th against Michelle Watterson. We'll talk to her about that fight at around 2:25. At 2:05, we'll be joined by the newly retired Chad Mendes in one of his first public interviews since announcing his retirement not that long ago. Curious as to why he is hanging it up right now. Miles Jury is the newest member of Bellator MMA. Reported that late last week. I do believe he'll be on at 1:45 bearing gifts. We'll talk to Leon Edwards at around 1:35. Talk about his win, what's next for him, why he can't seem to get that fight against Masvidal or the title shot rematch against Kamaru Usman. His last loss was to Usman, so we'll get Edwards' thoughts on all of that. Mark Goddard knows Leon Edwards almost better than anyone in the sport of MMA. I'll tell you why when he joins us at around 1:20. But first, let's go to the Skype machine and say hello to the man who won in just 12 seconds Saturday night. He won in the co-main event against Alexi Olenek. He is on some kind of roll. His last two fights have lasted a combined 62 seconds. That was the third fastest finish in UFC heavyweight history. I'm talking about the big ticket, Walt Harris, who joins us right now. Wow. Walt Harris, where are you right now? Wait, say that again. Sorry. This is where you do your streaming? Sorry, I lost the beginning of your answer there. No, I'm not hearing what you're saying, unfortunately. And now he's gone. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh. We will reconnect, as Corporate Jake likes to say. It's been a bit of a hectic morning back there. A lot of people working very hard. We've got some new changes in the studio and whatnot. So please bear with us. You know, I was kind of killing some time, and then I rushed through the lineup to get to Walt. And then, did you say we have him? Oh, okay. Corporate Jake, very snippy today on this Monday. He's not having as much fun as I am with the well-done steak and the Twitter comments and all that stuff. But that's the lineup. I ran through it. I'm very excited to talk to Steve-O. I saw a documentary about him yesterday about everything that he's been through with his sobriety and how he hit rock bottom and whatnot, but he really is a huge MMA fan. Like I went through some of his old tweets, his Instagram and whatnot, and the guy just loves the sport, like is watching from the first prelim all the way till the end. So, and of course this weekend I didn't mention Max Holloway returning against Frankie Edgar. Did you know that in the history of the UFC, only one champion has gone into a title defense coming off a loss? Anyone know the answer to that question? Anyone out there? Anyone at all? Anyone on social media? Anyone can tell me the answer to that? Only one champion in the history of the UFC has gone into a title defense coming off a loss. And you know what's amazing? That one guy, that last champion, also of Hawaiian descent. Yes, it was BJ Penn. Walked into UFC 101 coming off a loss to George St. Pierre. Lost to George St. Pierre at UFC 94. When he moved up to 170, came back down to 155, defend his lightweight title against Kenny Florian. And now here we have Max Holloway doing the same. Lost to Poirier, down to 145, defending. Isn't that amazing? Two Hawaiians. All right. Did Corporate Jake say we have Walt? Okay. There's a microphone. You have to talk into the microphone, Corporate Jake, like this. Talk, talk, talk. Let's try it again. Yeah, much better. Oh, Walt Harris. Let's go to the Skype machine. Walt, are you there?
What's up? I'm here.
Oh, there he is. Big Walt. Sorry about that. Now, for the fourth time, where are you right now?
Actually, we have a there, so this is where we hang out and kick it.
Okay. Well, that's a cool thing. What are you watching in the corner there? Is that UFC pro wrestling? What do we have over there? Over your right shoulder.
I was just playing UFC.
Oh, okay. Man. Well, I got a lot to talk to you about, Walt. First off, congratulations on the win. Your last two victories, 62 seconds combined. You're making up for, for lost time or something. I mean, it's kind of the opposite because you're going in and going out. Where are these knockouts coming from these days?
Just, I'm happy. Made a gym change. Work hard, man. I'm in the gym 2-3 times a day. And a great team behind me right now. So working.
Okay. Obviously, if you didn't have the positive test against Andrei Arlovsky, you'd be 4 in a row right now. You'd have 4 wins in a row. Do you feel like, let me put it like this. Can you explain what happened there so that we can actually consider that? What exactly happened? Because I feel like it was turned into a no contest. It was a great performance. Explain to us from your lips what exactly happened with that positive test.
There was a tainted supplement in which, from a local company here, and the label wasn't, labeled properly or whatever, and
do me a favor. I want to call you on the phone because it's still cutting in and out. I'm really sorry about this. We're going to call you on the phone right now because I don't want to hear half the answer. Is that okay? Sorry about this. We're going to call him on the phone. Sorry about that, everyone. Bit of a tough way to start the show, but I want to hear his answer correctly. I don't know. Should we try FaceTime? I don't know. All right. We're going to call Walt's phone right now. And we'll get the record straight. 6 knockouts since 2016, tied for the second most among heavyweights, only heavyweight in modern era UFC history with 2 finishes under a minute in a single calendar year. Think about that. The only heavyweight in modern era UFC history with 2 finishes under a minute in a single calendar year. And the 12-second finish on Saturday over Alexei Oleinik was the 3rd fastest in UFC history. By the way, I spoke to Olenek's manager, Abraham Kawa, on Sunday morning, and he told me that Olenek did, in fact, suffer an injury in his right leg, suffered a fracture in his leg, won't need surgery, but if you saw the highlight, he landed very awkwardly after he was knocked out. And so that's tough news for Alexei Oleinik. But all of a sudden, Walt Harris is on some kind of run these days. The big ticket, a former basketball player from Jackson State University. I do believe he's had a cup of coffee trying out for an NBA team. Wanted to talk to him about that and so much more as we try to reconnect with him. And later in the program, I'm looking forward to talking to Mark Goddard, one of the best referees in the game. As I said, he knows a lot about Leon Edwards. He's also from Birmingham, which is where Leon Edwards is from. In fact, I think he was at the gym the day Leon Edwards started his MMA training. And he told me last night when I was talking to him that he would never referee a Leon Edwards fight. He refuses to referee a Leon Edwards fight because they are so close. And as you may have seen on my ESPN.com Monday morning Random Thoughts article, I believe instead of campaigning for a Masvidal fight right now, instead of campaigning for an Usman fight, the best thing that can happen to Leon Edwards right now is a fight in his hometown of Birmingham, his adopted hometown. Of course, he's originally from Kingston, Jamaica. If he's able to fight in Birmingham and is able to come across like a superstar, as we've seen in other situations where someone goes home and the whole card is built around them and they're put on a pedestal, I think that would do him a lot of good. Hey, Corporate Jake, can I ask you a question? You there? At this juncture, instead of backing everyone up, what if we ask Walt if he could come on after Dan Hooker to give him the proper time and we just go straight to Mark Goddard? Okay. I just feel like instead of doing a 4-minute interview with him, we can just ask him if it's possible to come on later and then we could just talk to him there. And then we could be on time with Mark and not back everyone up. I think that will make more sense. All right. So we will effort to do that. Just came to me. Because you see, in this particular program, with all... do I want to do an ad read? I mean, this might be the worst start to the history of this, in the history of this program, if I do an ad read right now. I'll do it in a second. Let me just say that it's... The reason why you have to be strategic like this is because there's a domino effect. There's no commercial break. You can't speed up or buy time or take a little out. It's all live. So if someone gets backed up and then it's like a domino, everyone gets backed up. And you don't want to do that. So if maybe we can just move. And then maybe we can work on the technical issues and all that. Sure, I'll get the ad read out of the way to make Troy happy. What's going on with Troy over here right now? Let's see, he's probably complaining about... something else, everyone is complaining to me today. All right, here we go. Lightstream. Let me tell you about my good friends over at Lightstream. Are you tired of credit card bills with high interest rates? Ready to pay off your credit card balances and start saving money? Get a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream with rates as low as 5.95% APR with auto pay. Lower than the average credit card interest rate, over 19% APR, no application fees, no origination fees, no transaction fees, no prepayment penalties. The rate is fixed, so it will never go up over the life of the loan. Plus, you can even get your money in your bank account as soon as the day you apply. The online application is so easy. You can apply right from your phone, all right? Listen to this. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. Just for our listeners and viewers, right now, apply to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Ariel. That's lightstream.com/Ariel. LIGHTSTREAM.com/ARIEL. That easy. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Ariel for more information. There are the results from the UFC card in San Antonio. Like I said, a lot of decisions, especially on the prelims, but things got better during the main card. Am I reading this wrong? Yes. Yes, Corporate Jake. Okay, now did you say that to the world, or was that just to me? Oh, okay. Cause you know, no one wants to listen to me just listening to you. Yeah. Okay. So this is coming from Corporate Jake, who's very shy. We will go to Mark Goddard. I just want you to all know so you can plan your day accordingly. We're going to go to Mark Goddard here in a matter of moments. Or do we have Mark? Oh, all right. And we'll talk to Walt Harris in a minute. There he is. Mark Goddard. How are you? Let's try this. Mark, everything good? Thanks for joining us.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for coming on the show. It's great to talk to you. So this is a little different, Mark, because I was actually talking to Gareth A. Davies, the veteran British journalist, a couple days ago. And we were talking about Leon Edwards because I saw Gareth call him the best British MMA fighter right now. And I was like, man, it's amazing to me. Like, it just seems like people aren't getting behind him. They don't understand what he's all about, where he's from, what he's had to overcome. He wrote a great story for us through Mark Raimondi on ESPN.com a couple days ago talking about his upbringing. But then Gareth told me that you know him very well. You're from Birmingham, and you can maybe help explain who Leon is and where he is from. So first, let me ask you, when did you first meet Leon Edwards?
Yeah, I first met Leon when he was a very young boy. He walked into his first ever MMA gym about probably 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer than that now. I'll double check the facts, but I was actually coaching. I was actually teaching. I was a part owner at the first gym that he walked into as a youngster. Fresh off the street.
Wow. Had never trained before?
Never.
Wow. And so how long ago was this approximately?
I'm going to say easily 10 years.
And what were your first impressions of him?
Yeah, he was, without being condescending, just a nice kid. He was from, the gym was in a place called Erdington, which is on the other side of Birmingham. And he was just a young, quiet kid at the time who just happened to see and wanted to find out what MMA was all about.
Did you see something in him? Did you think, okay, there's something there. He's a piece of clay. This kid could turn into something. Or are you a bit surprised about all this, the streak that he's on?
No, without being, without just blowing smoke or saying it because we're talking together now, I could tell, he's kind of like what I would class as the new breed. He didn't have a martial arts background. He wasn't coming from boxing, wrestling, jiu-jitsu. He was just a young, hungry, athletic kid, and he just kind of soaked it all up from there. And, I have good memories of Leon, and I have good things to say about him. He's a good lad, as we say around here.
Yes, and, his manager, Tim Simpson, tells me all the time about the rough upbringing and what he's had to overcome. And I've talked to Leon a bit about like the gang culture where he's from. Could you tell us a bit about that? How bad was it where he is from?
Yeah, look, it's Birmingham. We're, this is a major city in England, city number two, in England behind London. Manchester will probably contest to that. But like any major city in any developed country, gang culture, it is here. It's a big part of what goes on in a sizable city. And from the area that Leon was living in at the time where he was growing up, where the actual gym was, like many other areas in Birmingham, in any other major city, it had its rough spots and its tough spots. And Leon was kind of right in the thick of that.
Do people in Birmingham now realize that there's a guy in the UFC who's from there, who's on this winning streak? Like, are they starting to get behind him? Like we've seen Liverpool, Darren Till, Manchester with Michael Bisping. Are you sensing that or not quite yet?
No, in all honesty, no. And I think it's a crying shame. I don't know why. I've been around this game for longer than most, and I can't quite figure out why. People within the sport, and obviously Leon's friends and all the people he trains with, the people that he knows, they know what he's capable of. They know what he's achieved this past. He's kind of quietly gone about his business. He's a humble guy. He doesn't really talk too much. He doesn't court the cameras. He's like the adage of, he lets his fights do the talking. But for some reason in Birmingham, we do have a deep storied history with fighting, with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu was one of the epicenters of its growth from Europe, what was here, not London. Freestyle wrestling, believe it or not, is also something that's quite prevalent here in Birmingham. Boxing and MMA in the last, 15, 20 years. But it's kind of, I can't quite put my finger on it that the crowds and the fans don't seem to get behind the local guys. Maybe he just hasn't made enough noise, or from a marketing perspective, people don't know. But it is a strange one.
It's very strange, and so I have to wonder in the MMA community why they don't get behind him. But if they aren't getting behind him in his hometown, his adopted hometown, then maybe there's something, I don't know, there's something going on here. I have a theory and I want to ask you about it. So my theory is that when the UFC wants to turn someone into a star, you bring them home, like what we saw with Darren Till in Liverpool, because then the fans from all over the world watch the way he is received at home, and they see the hero's welcome, and there's a trickle-down effect, and thus they now view him in a different light. We saw it with Connor in Dublin. We saw it with Stipe when he came home to Cleveland. We saw it with Darren Till last year in Liverpool. And so I feel like the best thing possible, or at least I thought the best thing possible for Leon Edwards would be to have an event in Birmingham. As you said, number two city in England, so it's a big market. There's a big arena there. I know that. And thus the fans would react to him. He'd be a big deal, and there'll be this trickle-down effect. But are you telling me that even if the UFC went to Birmingham, it wouldn't even be that big of a deal because no one really gets behind him there?
No. Look, I mean, the UFC have been to Birmingham twice.
No, I mean, but with him as the centerpiece.
Yeah, but obviously that's a marketing thing, isn't it? I'm almost certain. Look, when you're standing in the octagon and, you know, if he was main eventing, he's main event material now. He's had a couple of main events. And I'm pretty sure if the UFC came back to Birmingham, you know, for sure they're going to build and market the event around Leon. And you know as well as I do, when Buffer stands in the middle and he's announcing the fighters and he says, you know, fighting out of Birmingham, England, the place is going to erupt. It's going to go mental. You know, such is the power of the UFC. And I hope that they do that for him, you know, because he deserves it now. What, 8-fight win streak? Look at the caliber of the opponents that he's ramped himself up with, his last 3 fights in particular. And I'm sure he's clamoring to get the UFC back here. But you know what that schedule is like. I hope they do. And I'm almost certain that the city would get behind him. It's just, like I said, MMA here, it's getting more popular, but it's a weird thing. Like I said, I can't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah.
People in the know, but the wider general public, they don't seem to take up on it.
It's an unfortunate reality in our sport, right? Like, winning just isn't enough. You have to make a lot of noise. You have to be very colorful. You can't just go out there and get victories over the likes of RDA and Donald Cerrone and Gunnar Nelson, right? Like, unfortunately, if you want to really be successful in this sport, you have to do a whole lot more. And I think Leon is starting to learn that the hard way.
Yeah, I mean, that's the fight business, isn't it?
Yeah.
And let's, the operative there, you know, the underscore there is the word business, because it is a business. It's not just about you. Obviously, first and foremost, and of vast importance, is what you're doing inside the ring and inside the cage. If you're not, you know, winning fights, then it's hard to build. But Leon's momentum, like I said, what's that, 8 fights straight on the bounce? And especially in his last 3 or 4 fights, the caliber. I mean, he's had tough fights across the board, but I think from a general fan's perspective, you know, the wins that he's chalked up in his last 3 or 4 fights consecutively, I think that's garnered him more interest than he's ever had before. And like I said, I think he deserves it. I live in Birmingham. You know, Birmingham's my hometown. When the UFC come here, I can be back. There's 2 arenas here. One's inside the city. One's just outside the city. And I can be back home in 20 or 30 minutes. So from a selfish point of view, yeah, I would love to see them back here.
Is it true that you won't referee any of his fights?
That's true.
Why not?
Because from even though I haven't been in the same gym as Leon for a number of years, I stopped coaching him before he actually turned as a professional. But Ariel, you know what it's like as a ref. If you can draw the faintest, you imagine me refing one of Leon's fights, something
right.
happens, and then somebody says, Mark was on the same mat as Leon 10 years ago. I don't need that in my life. So from an integrity point of view, from a professional point of view, any kind of tie-in that we have with a fighter, no matter how distinct or how faint or how remote, we just make that well-known from the get-go, and it just saves any form of hassle all round.
Yeah.
I don't associate with any. Obviously, you know, from a competitive I've been in the cage with fighters and that over the years, trained with various people. But when it gets to any form of question mark, I just remove myself from that situation. I've been active in this sport, MMA exclusively, for 20 years. Fighters have even got to the UFC that I've fought. Fighters that I've beat, they've got to the UFC. and I just make it known to the authorities beforehand, look, just schedule me out of that fight. It's just basic common sense and professionalism.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think that's a very good stance, and there's no need to create those conflicts. So why not just remove yourself? So I give you a lot of respect for that. I just wanted to ask you about two other things. You were refereeing that somewhat historic Cage Warriors main event last month, or was it? Yeah, it was late last month. The Ross Houston Nicholas Dalby fight, where it ended because of excessive blood. Have you ever been a part of something like that before, where you had to stop a fight because there was just too much blood on the canvas?
No, Ariel, right, here's the thing. It wasn't because, yes, it was because they were bleeding, but the fight would stop because the surface was vinyl. If it was canvas, the fight wouldn't have been stopped. They had to stop the fight because it turned into a skating rink. You know, in MMA, in professional MMA at the highest level, you know, Cage Warriors is obviously, you know, an incredible level. Fighters bleed. That's not the issue. Obviously, if there's a cut that's in a troublesome position and the doctor advised me to stop the fight, I'm going to take his advice. But the reason that that fight was stopped, it wasn't, yes, there was a lot of blood and it looked worse than what it was because the surface that they were fighting on was vinyl. So there was nowhere for the blood to go, nowhere for the blood to soak. And it was becoming a dangerous environment for myself and the two fighters. And it was a very unique set of circumstances. Had it been a canvas, I think the fight would have played out to its natural conclusion.
Do you think, or have you heard that Cage Warriors will now change the material of their canvas or of their mat to canvas as opposed to vinyl?
I haven't spoke to the guys. You know, Cage Warriors, like I said, you know, that they're at the forefront of European MMA. Anyone, you know them yourself.
Yep.
It's a strange one because I've had, you know, bloody fights before where guys have been opened up and they're bleeding like a tap. This was just like a perfect storm because both guys were cut and bleeding excessively. If it was one person who was cut and the doctor come in, you could lean towards stopping the fight in favor of the person who wasn't bleeding. But like I said, it was a perfect storm. It was the vinyl surface. Dalby had a huge gash opened up on his head. Ross had a compound fracture of his nose. They were both open like taps. And it was, for me, it was a common sense. Anybody who was watching it, especially live, they kind of understood why I took the decision real time that I did.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see them get a rematch at UFC Copenhagen. I know this has been discussed, and you referee, like, just recreate the whole thing, but in the UFC, in that Copenhagen card. That would be a great moment there. I mean, it would just be perfect. And I see some little whispers about that. I think it would be amazing, but obviously, 100% agree with your decision. Also wanted to ask you, last week, Sam Alvey was very critical of you, and I know you've been through this before. You've been around the block many a times. You're no stranger to this criticism. I was just wondering if you had a response to some of the things that he had to say about not wanting you to referee his fights anymore.
I don't want to referee Sam's fights anymore. You know, in fairness to myself, I did hear what Sam said, and I can understand his reasoning. You know, the last thing I ever want to do is adversely affect a fighter in any way. And I don't want any fighter getting in there with any preconception or misconception even in their mind, worrying about what a referee may or may not do. Look, I was a little bit upset when I heard that Sam was calling me a dick. You know, that was a little bit cutting because if you remember after the Jim Crute fight, I served myself and opened myself up publicly. I said, hey, you know, on any other given day, maybe they've done things different. I'm sorry, Sam. I hope you understand that I'm just doing this based on what I see real time and I want to protect you. And if in doing that and opening myself up publicly makes me a dick, then, you know, so be it. I can't help his stance on me. And like I said, I hope he continues to fight. And again, in the realms of integrity and professionalism, it's look, there's a lot more referees than me in the world, and me and Sam and Eva, you know, we don't always have to be on the same card. And even if we are in the future, there's several referees. That means that I can be scheduled out of this fight, and then it's fair all round.
Right.
I hold, you know, maybe wildly popular. I hold no grudges to anybody or anything. I heard what he said. I understand what he said, and I wish him nothing but the best for the future.
Well, you are a class act, and in my opinion, one of the very best referees in this game. You can make a very strong case that you are the best right now, and I'm happy that you're getting more opportunities to ref events in the United States these days. And congratulations on being named president of the English MMA Association. I think that's great what you and Dan Hardy, Rosie Sexton, veterans are doing for the sport. And also congratulations on your podcast with Dan Hardy as well. You're everywhere. You're omnipresent, Mr. Goddard.
Sometimes, well, Ariel, if we haven't actually recorded a podcast for nearly 4 months. I left it alone for a few months.
Okay.
But weirdly enough, we're actually scheduled, me and Dan are scheduled to meet tomorrow and resurrect it and bring it back.
Perfect.
But I hadn't actually done a I hadn't actually done a podcast for 4 months. I just, the omnipresent word to me, it kind of, you know, a lot of people have the opinions that referees shouldn't be present at all, apart from when they're refereeing fights. So that's something I wanted to get understand in my mind before I decided to continue doing this. Is it what people want? And if so, then maybe I will, and we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, I wish you the best. You're always kind to come on the show and answer the questions. And I appreciate you painting a bit of a picture of who Leon Edwards is and where he's from. Thank you for doing this, Mark. I appreciate it, and all the best to you.
Thanks, Ariel. I'll see you. I'll probably see you the weekend if you're in Edmonton.
All right. Yes, I will see you there.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. There he is. The man, Mark Goddard, one of the very best at what he does. One of the legends of MMA refereeing. And for the longest time, he was just refereeing in England. Now getting the opportunity to do a lot more, events in the United States. And you saw his resume there. He's done, I think, 5 title fights in 2019 alone. So, very impressive stuff. All right. Now let us talk to the man we were just talking about. Leon Edwards. Rocky is here coming off his big win over one RDA in the same location as Mark Goddard in his car as well. Leon, how are you?
I am good, brother. How are you?
Hey, congratulations, my man. What a great performance. Was this the best one of the 8 fights? What do you think?
It's the biggest name.
Yeah.
RDA is a former world champion, so it's definitely the biggest name. So it's good. Good. I've been telling everyone, Errol, I'm one of the best fighters in the world. So I'm just proving it fight by fight.
Are you starting to get the feeling that people are starting to listen to you, that they're starting to believe in what you're saying now?
I feel so. I feel my record speak for itself. I'm now on an 8-fight win streak, second most to the current champion, Usman. So I feel that now they're taking note, and slowly but surely they're clocking on.
Are you able to enjoy these victories, Leon? Because it seems like every time you fight, immediately it's like, okay,
what's next?
What's next? Well, a referendum on your character, referendum on where you stand in the division, and should you get this guy, and should you fight for the belt, and why aren't you? Like, it's just like we can't just talk about the win. Are you able to enjoy it and ignore everything around, or does it get annoying as well?
It used to get annoying, but I have grown to enjoy my process. I've grown to enjoy my journey. So, I'm enjoying this win. My last fight, I didn't get to enjoy the win because of what happened backstage. But now I get to enjoy it. I just beat a former world champion in RDA, and I'm taking great, great knowledge from that fight and keep improving from that fight.
What a performance. I thought it was 5 rounds to none. Maybe you can make a case for the last round. At any point, did you feel in danger? At any point, did he hurt you? At any point, was he doing something that you didn't expect?
Not really. I am a student of the game. I knew everything he was going to throw. I knew what to take him down, what he was going to do. I could read him like a book in there, so I was not surprised by anything. He's tough. Apart from that, that's about it. Skill wise, all fight week I kept saying, I am the better fighter here. I know he's probably got a better resume than me. He's a veteran of the game, but I am the better fighter. I went out there and I get to prove it.
Yeah, that was something that really stood out to me in watching the fight. It did seem like you knew his move before he was going to do it, like you were one step ahead of him, which was supremely impressive considering how tough RDA is. And, you know, like all of a sudden now you hear people say like, oh, he's old and stuff. He just beat Kevin Lee 2 months ago. You know what
exactly,
I mean?
Exactly. It's a mad game. It's a mad game, Errol. Yeah. Every time I win, there's an excuse. But when they when I fought Vincent Luque, he was knocking everyone out. Then I beat him. And I was knocking everyone out again. Then going to Nelson, he beat Cowboy. He beat whoever he beat. They didn't make another excuse. Going to Nelson, it wasn't all that. Then they beat Cowboy. He said Cowboy wasn't all that. They beat RDA. Now it's RDA and all that. So it's all excuses, Errol. I take it in my stride. I enjoy it. I just keep winning, and that's all I keep doing. Just keep winning, and I'll get to that gold belt.
This is one of the more interesting 8-fight winning streaks in the history of the sport, because you do have to try to get people behind you and puff your chest out. Why do you think it is taking people so long to get on your bandwagon?
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. I just do what I can do, Errol. I focus on myself, and I don't know what it is. I don't know. It's probably because I'm not like hype on social media or whatever it is, but I do not know. Like I said, I control what I control. I go out there, I beat the best of the world, I win, and they cannot deny me for much longer.
How did they treat you in Texas, in San Antonio?
It was beautiful. I loved it. I went out there for 2 weeks. Went out there a week early, prior to the fight, and it was beautiful. The weather was nice. It was like 38. It was like one of the highest I've been in, so it's good. The people was nice. The fans was nice, and I love the party again. It was a nice place.
I don't know if you know this, Leon, but I took a lot of heat last week because I compared you to the great NBA player Tim Duncan. I said you are the Tim Duncan of the UFC, and everyone got so mad at me. How dare you compare Leon Edwards to Tim Duncan? And then I see you met Tim Duncan afterwards. What was that like?
Man.
There he is. Look at that picture. Did you, honestly now, did you know who he was?
I didn't have a clue, Errol. Yeah, you mentioned it on your show. you mentioned it on your show. I asked my manager who he was, and I Googled him, and then I found out he was a legend of the sport. So I didn't have a clue before that. But once I seen him at the fight, he was very nice, and he was a very humbled man. And he just told me congrats. He enjoyed the fight, and it was good. Good to meet him.
You see, here's
the big dude.
Oh, he's like 7'3". This is the thing that people are missing with my analogy. They say, oh, Leon Edwards never won a title, and Tim Duncan is a multiple time champion. But here's the difference. In his sport, all you have to do is win to get the title. In your sport, you're dealing with politics. Who's to say you want to be champion already? So these people, I'm talking about your personality, the fact that you win, you're not a showy. Like, how do you not see the analogy, people? Come on, it's right there. So I love the fact that you got to meet him.
Exactly. All of these win, Errol, yeah? You got to think, there's no one else that's on an 8-fight win streak that's not getting a title shot in the World Cup division. It's madness. I should have had a title shot, like, probably, like, 6 fights, 5 fights in. There's people coming in with, like, 2 fights getting a title shot. So, it is what it is, Errol. Like I said, I take it in my stride. I enjoy the process and enjoy my journey. I keep proving people wrong, and it's all good.
So you got on the microphone after and you called out Jorge Masvidal. You said, all right, stop being a weasel, let's go. And then he responds kind of on Twitter. What did you make? Do you think this is actually going to happen? Do you feel like it's going to happen?
That's probably the fastest response I've ever seen from a call out. I don't think it's him. I think it's the manager and his Twitter that's writing all this shit. Cause that was fast. And the man just keep ducking me, Errol. I don't know what it is. He keep making excuses after excuse after excuse. So I don't know what it is, but his day will come, and we'll see. I know he's a weasel. He knows he's a weasel, and I'll prove to the world that he's a weasel.
Have you guys actually sat down and talked to the UFC, like your management said, this guy, you know, he punched him, whether or not it was a jump, whether, like, there was an incident backstage at a UFC event. How do we not make this fight happen? Like, it's almost too perfect. Like, why are we not talking about this right now? Has the UFC ever answered that question?
Since the fight, I've approached them many times and said, let's make the fight happen. And they keep making excuses as well. They said, George don't want it. They don't want it yet. And they're saying they don't want it. They don't want to make it yet because it's too hostile and blah, blah, blah. And so I don't know. But that's the fight to make. That's the fight the fans want to see. That's the fight I want. That's the fight everyone wants to see. So let's make it for number one contender spot and we go from there.
Oh, yeah. That would be huge. Do you feel like it could happen? Are you confident?
I'm confident. There's nowhere for him to go, Errol. Just 2 fights ago, he's on like a 2-fight losing streak. I think it's like 2-2 in his last 4. He's about to get cut from the UFC, so I don't understand what all this power shot coming from. He's a journeyman in the game, and that's what I believe. He's a small journeyman. He got 2 lucky wins, and now he wants power shot and demanding just three fights ago, you'd like to get caught from the UFC. So, I believe the fight will happen. It needs to happen, and they need to make it happen.
How will you react if he actually gets a title shot before you?
I don't know. I don't know, Errol. I don't know. That would be something if they actually did give him a title shot above me. You know, if I look at my resume, coming to compete his resume, the streak that he's going into a title shot with, you know what I mean? He just fought Ben Askren. I consider him amateur of the game, and it's mad. So let's see what they come back with, and we go from there.
You consider Ben Askren an amateur, really?
He was before Errol, like probably name on his record, probably like 2-3 good people. Like, I don't think he's all that. He talks a good game, but I don't think he's all that.
So you weren't impressed with that knockout?
What, my solo knockout?
Yeah.
Now, that was good. That was a good knockout, but he dips the head into a knee like that. And he did the same technique when he fought Darren Till. He charged against the cage and threw the flying knee, and he did exactly the same thing against Ben, but he ducked his head into it.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it was a good knockout. I can't take nothing from it. You know what I mean? I'm not a hater. It did what it did. And that's it.
So maybe the best thing for you would be Colby Covington wins on August 3rd. They finally give him that title shot, and they do you versus Masvidal, number one contender.
That'd be good. But I also have to fight Usman as well, so.
Sure.
If that does happen, then I hope Usman beats Colby. Then I'll beat Masvidal, then I can fight Usman. That's the perfect.
Are we saying right now, though? Leon Edwards is not accepting anything other than Jorge Masvidal in a title shot. Is that what you're saying?
That's it, Errol. There's nothing else. That's the fight, so I am not interested. I'm not taking a random fight again. That'll be it. So see with title shot, the Weasel, or that's it. I'll sit down and I'll wait.
What do you think of my idea of having an event in Birmingham, Leon? I feel like that would be the best thing for you to have a whole event built around you, like Darren Till had last year in Liverpool. You should get this. Any talks of this?
That would be a dream come true, Errol. I keep pushing it to the UFC. That would be amazing. The last time I came to my hometown was, I think, 8 years ago, probably 8-9 years ago, when my teammate Vaughn Lee, he made his debut in the show, and I remember going to the show and watching it from the stick. From like the fight looked small to me at the time, and go back now and to headline the bill in my hometown and to inspire the other kids that was like me back then to see that you can do come from where I come from, then that would be amazing. I keep begging them and pushing them, let's come back to my hometown. You need to come back. MMA is big here. Everyone loves it here, and you need to come back. So I am praying that they come back, and that's one of the two highlights of my career, if they did a title shot and come back to my hometown.
Oh, yeah. That would be magic. One last thing before I let you go. Last week, you spoke to ESPN.com about your upbringing and everything that you've been through. You have been somewhat reserved in talking about some of this stuff, but you really put it all out there. Was that difficult for you?
It was hard. I'm not a very open guy. I was taught as a kid, you keep your business to yourself. But I thought it was a big platform. There's other kids out there like me going through the stuff I go through or worse. So why not tell my story to give them something to inspire them? That you can be anything you want to be in life. You do not have to finish where you start in life. And that's just my story, Errol. I want to keep telling the kids, you can do anything. You don't have to, just because you start at the bottom, you don't have to finish at the bottom. And I think that's what most kids, they think in their head when they start from a bad upbringing, that they have to follow all the way through to the end of life. And so that's my story. I'll keep pushing that, keep telling everyone around me that, and I'm hoping to inspire one kid. If I do, that'd be amazing. So that's my story, and that's all I want to keep doing.
Have you heard from people since you? I know you were focused on the fight, but I saw the feedback was great. Have you heard from people?
Yeah, a lot of people messaged me on social media, just saying I'm an inspiration and thank you for telling my story and stuff like that. So it was good. At the time, I didn't want to tell it because, like I said, I was taught as a kid that you keep your business to yourself. You don't go around telling your story. But I'm in a different life now. I'm in a total different life from what I was back then. And it's good to tell other kids that, like I said, you can be anything you want to be in life as long as you work hard and dedicate yourself to something. You can be anything you want to be. You can change your family's life. just by doing what you want to do and dedicating yourself to anything in life, and that's just it.
Well done, Leon. Congratulations on the victory. Keep it up, my man. 8 in a row now, second longest active streak in the division. The Tim Duncan of the UFC. There he is. Respect that man. Yes. Keep doing your thing, my man. Congratulations. And thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
All right. There he is. Leon Rocky Edwards. Will he get that respect? Finally. Come on, everyone. He's right. Masvidal fighter title shot. That's it. 8 wins in a row. Event in Birmingham. Let's go. Respect the man. All right. So great little discussion there about his adopted hometown and speaking to the man himself. Now, let us move along. Say hello to our next guest. Some big news regarding him late last week. Miles Jury, now the newest member of Bellator MMA, kind enough to join us on the program to talk about this big moment in his life. Miles, how are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Congratulations on this new deal. Why did you decide to sign with Bellator?
You know, like, since my last fight with Feely back in February, just been kind of waiting to get a fight. My management, talking to UFC, and, you know, long story short, you know, there was talks, and then it just kind of fell through. They weren't going to give me another fight. We couldn't come to an agreement on a new deal. You know, it's for my management. And basically, they just told me, like, hey, we talked to Bellator, you know, they want to offer you this deal, and, you know, would you be open to it? And, you know, I looked at the deal, and I was like, hell yeah. I was like, let's go. I felt like this deal with Bellator is awesome. It's huge for me, so moving forward with it.
So is this deal financially better than the one that you had with the UFC?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yes. It sounds like it's a lot better.
Yeah, it is, man. And, financially, it's a lot better. The opportunity is a lot better. You know, so I'm fighting. I'll let you know first. I'm fighting Benson Henderson, September 27th, main event in Dublin, Ireland.
Oh, wow.
So they're giving me a main event fight right off tops. Somebody great like Benson. So I'm looking to make a splash, and I'm looking to make a splash really quick in the Bellator.
Wow. Okay. Congratulations. So again, September 27th, Benson Henderson at 155 pounds, correct?
Yes. Yeah. 155.
Why 155 now?
You know, honestly, it was just what was offered to me. I was trying to get in that featherweight tournament in Bellator, that $1 million one. But they already had that all booked up, and Bellator was like, hey man, like, what do you guys think of Benson Henderson main event? And I was like, yeah, I was like, let's do it. You know, that's a great fight for me. And it's a great opportunity. You know, I've never been to Dublin, and I feel like this will be a great performance for me, you know, to showcase all my skills. So I jumped on it.
Are you a little surprised by this? I mean, sometimes when you're on a bit of a losing streak, the contract is up, you're not going to get a better deal and a main event against a former champion. Like, is this like almost like, wow, this is almost too good to be true here?
You know, like, honestly, man, this game is so crazy. I really don't, every time I feel like I figured it out, like, something crazy happens and it goes the opposite way. So kind of going to this next change of going into Bellator, man, I just want to do it with trust. And shout out my management, you know, the Diamond, Dave Martin, because he hooked up a great deal. And, you know, props to him.
Did you guys talk to any other promotions or just Bellator?
Dude, it was so quick. Like, literally, like, the next day, Bellator offered us this deal, and it was just solid all around. So I was like, there's really no reason to wait, to look around. So we jumped on it. And, you know, for me, I want to get back in there, man. I want to get fighting. You know, I'm just now getting into my prime. And I feel like with Bellator, man, it's underrated, in my opinion. You know, I feel like there's a lot of great fighters. I feel like there's a lot of potential for growth for the organization and for myself in there. So I'm just looking forward, man, to this next chapter and evolving in Bellator.
Do you leave the UFC with any regrets?
No, not at all. I mean, you look at my career, I've had some big fights for them. I've built a big name for myself in UFC, man. Main events, co-main events. And, you know, I can leave there feeling accomplished with no regrets at all.
Okay, so now that you move on, you say that you're in the prime of your career, and I know some people listen to that and be like, well, how can you say you're in the prime of your career if you're on a losing streak? Why? What happened in those two fights? How do you explain the recent skid?
I feel like in those two fights, I feel like I was just kind of fighting more myself. You know, since the Mendes fight and the Feely fight, I've had an opportunity to sit back and, you know, I kind of went to a leadership program and we went over and went into a lot to emotional intelligence and mentality aspect of just life. And I feel like right now, mentally and emotionally, I feel like I've grown so much since them fights. And, you know, just the hard work and perfect timing. Man, I've been putting in a lot of work my whole life, and I'm just now getting that peak emotionally, mentally, physically.
This leadership program, is that the same thing that Jeremy Stephens went to?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Did you go together?
No. He went before me, and he's actually the one that enrolled me to go to it.
Wow.
Because I was like, honestly, man, I was like, I don't need that stuff. I'm good. You know, I'm like, you know, I'm good, strong mentally, emotionally, and, you know, he got me into it, and it, honestly, man, it was one of the greatest gifts you could have given me, because I grew a lot from it and came out a lot more aware, you know, and just learned a lot of stuff about myself that's going to translate in these next fights.
So how many days did you have to go away for? How many days did you know, like, were you at the program for?
Yeah, so it's 2 weekends. So I was there from Thursday to Sunday. Two separate weekends, and it's from like 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. at night. So it's long days, each one of those days on those two separate weekends. And then I'm in there's a third part, which is the leadership part, and it's 100 days. So I'm just now starting to finish that up. So
wow.
It's intense, man. It's intense.
100 days straight?
Yeah, 100 days.
Oh my
gosh. The third part of the program. Yeah.
And
it's a commitment. It's a commitment.
Is this where you live, or you have to go somewhere else?
It's in Vegas, so I'm in San Diego right now, so it's not too far from me. The first 2 weekends are the ones that are in Vegas, uh-huh. And then the 100 days after those 2 weekends, I can do that in San Diego.
Wow! And what does that entail? The 100 days, and is it consecutive days?
Yes. Yep. So it's each day you're on calls, and you choose like five kind of goals that you want to accomplish over those 100 days. And you got a personal coach. You have a team with you, and, you know, you guys are on calls every day. You guys have tasks every day to do. And, a lot of it's accountability, you know, people keeping you accountable for, you know, your goals, what you want to accomplish.
And you feel like a different person. Like, how can you tangibly say, like, what feels different about you now, or your mindset now?
Yeah. So one big thing I learned going through the program is that I have like a big belief in me, or a limiting belief that it's like a perfectionist kind of mindset, and kind of like that mindset I have to do everything on my own. And you know, it was really affecting me during my training camps, my fights, because I felt so alone going into the fights and not listening to my coaches, not trusting them. So I really learned that going through the program, that was holding me back. And it was all just, you know, a limiting belief. That's all it is. It was just all in my head. And, you know, another thing was just being connected with people, man. Like, if I didn't know you growing up, you know, I didn't have a relationship with you. I was just like, I don't care to connect with you, man. I was just like very cold and disconnected like that. And just going through the program, I just learned that was something I picked up growing up, and it wasn't serving me, you know, cause that's not the life I want to live. So now it's just, you know, those are a couple of things that I learned that were big for me. And, you know, moving forward, being the person I want to be, you know, I'm working on trusting my coaches more. I'm, reaching out more. I know that I can't win this world title by myself, man. And I want to be more connected, you know, with my team, my family, my fans. And, those are a couple of, big takeaways I got from the program.
It's so fascinating to hear you talk about this and to talk like this. Cause I remember, I think it was in Buffalo, UFC 210, after you won that fight. Who was it against? It was Mike De La Torre. And you spoke about the media and not really liking to do the media stuff and all that. And it seemed like there was like a wall between you and us. And now here you are on the show, and I think off the top of my head, this might be your first time on the show. Maybe you've changed a little bit. Maybe you don't hate us as much as we felt like you did.
Straight up, man. Straight up. Yeah, this is my first time being on the show, and you know, you have a great show, and I'm happy to finally be on it. And yeah, man, I think a lot of it was just you know, coming from a mindset of scarcity. You know what I mean? Like, just reaching out to my fans and trusting them, and just not putting walls up. You know, I feel like in society nowadays, there's a lot of stuff going on that it's easily just you know, people wear masks, people put up walls, and you don't really ever get to see like the real person. You know what I mean? People are so much like, you know, staying back, and that's not who I want to be, man. I don't want to live a life in fear. I want to live a life with passion and love. And, that's what I'm working on, man. And it's uncomfortable even for me to be out here talking about this stuff, you know, but I know that's why I'm doing the right thing, because usually when you're uncomfortable, that's when you're challenging yourself and you're pushing yourself past those mental barriers. And yeah, man, that's what I'm working on now. Just, being uncomfortable, and, they call it looking into the fire, you know? So, keep going into that fire.
I love that. Yeah. When I asked Bellator if he would come on, I was like, yeah, there's probably, you know, no chance that he's going to come on the show, because I know his stance. And then like, no, Miles is going to do it. I was like, wow, there's a friend of yours. His name escapes me right now, but he would write me from time to time, be like, I'm trying to get Miles to come on your show, but he doesn't like to do media and stuff like that. Do you know who this person is? I forget his name now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my boy. That's my best friend from Michigan, man, Josh Hadid.
Yes. Yes. He would always tell me, he's like, I'm trying to get Miles to come on your show, but we watch it, but he doesn't want to talk to anyone and stuff like that. I was like, I'm not that bad of a guy, but getting to find out a little bit more of your stance and now to see this sort of 180 that you've done as a result of this program is pretty amazing. It's great to hear.
Yes, man. Yes. Thank you. I'm a... You know, again, living a life, just living a deeper life, man. You know, not living in fear, living in love and passion, man. And that's when moving forward. And that's what's going to really help me out in this next fight, you know.
Is there a chance that you can slide in as an alternate in the 145 tournament? Or is that all set? Is that all filled up as far as you know?
I have no idea. I didn't even ask Dave. They would have to give me a heads up for the 45 because, you know, I'm a bigger dude right now. I'm walking over 80. So,
wow.
You know, to be at 45, I need time to be on my diet and run.
Okay. And as far as this matchup against Benson Henderson, which you just broke again, September 27th in Dublin, main event, Benson Henderson, huge opportunity for you. What do you think of this fight? Were you happy when they offered you this? Did you like the matchup?
Yeah, I loved it, man. I feel like beating somebody like Benson is perfect for me. I feel like, you know, he's good all around. He's a former champion. You know, he's no easy fight. But I feel like I just got to go out there, man, and be violent wherever the fight goes. You know, make it nasty, whether it's on the feet, on the ground, off my back, whatever, and beat Benson.
And by the way, how is Jeremy doing these days? We spoke to him around a year ago or so, or maybe like 6 or so months ago, and he was telling us about a lot of things he's been through. How is he doing? How's he doing these days?
He's good. He's really good, man. He's just waiting for a fight. You know what I mean? He's always ready. So we're at the gym right now. Oh, speak of the devil.
Jeremy
right
Stevens.
Wow.
How are you?
Yeah, he's waiting for a fight, man.
Jeremy Stevens waiting for a fight.
All right, there we go. Wow, did you guys time that or what?
No, not at all. We're just at the gym right now. I'm gonna go train after I talk to you, and he's gonna do some pad work right now. So
okay, amazing. We'll let you go train, my man. Thank you very much for doing this. Congratulations on the new deal with Bellator, and congrats on getting that main event fight against Benson Henderson. Appreciate you breaking that here.
Yeah, thank you, Errol. I appreciate it, man.
All right, all the best to you. There he is, Miles Jury. AKA Fury Jury. Wow. If you have some time later on, go check out that UFC 210 scrum in Buffalo. And I think he did it again before a fight in Las Vegas, if memory serves me correct. And fascinating guy. And at first it's like there's a bit of a barrier there. But when you get past the barrier, I remember this vividly about the Buffalo fight, did not really want to engage with the media, felt like it wasn't worth his time, felt like it was a waste of time, and had some really interesting things. I appreciate that if someone's honest about that sort of thing. I don't take that personally. And not to see him talk like that, pretty amazing stuff. So good on him. Congrats on the new deal. And again, if you missed it, September 27th, he's fighting Benson Henderson, the former UFC lightweight champion and WEC champion in Dublin. So a big opportunity there for Miles Jury, who's on a bit of a skid these days, but looking to get back on track in Bellator. All right, let's move along to our next guest. In fact, our next guest has a win over Miles Jury. He mentioned it just moments ago. I've been trying to talk to this man for quite some time, but he's an elusive one. However, a couple of weeks ago, he officially announced that he was retiring for good. And so I tried one more time, and thankfully, I got in touch with him. We're joined now by Chad Money Mendez, who's kind enough to join us. Chad, how are you, my man?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great.
Congrats on me on Ariel.
Yes, it's great to finally track you down. I'm happy that you're on the show. So congratulations on the announcement, on a great career. For those that missed the announcement, could you explain in your words why you're deciding to hang him up now?
Yeah, man, I had a great career. This is something that I've thought about the last couple years. Actually tried doing a few years ago as well and talked me out of it. Ended up fighting a few more fights, but man, it's just that time for me in my career. I started a successful business back in 2015, you know, doing something that is my true passion. Living the outdoor lifestyle, do a lot of stuff in the hunting and fishing community. So, you know, we started a business back then. It's grown and done really well. So for me, it's just making that transition to the new chapter of my life. And I had an awesome time being a fighter and living that lifestyle, you know, growing up as a wrestler and making a transition from wrestling after college into the fight game. Did it for about 11 years. And like I said, it's just, in my mind, in my heart, it just feels like it's that next time. I've always said, even right out of college, I said I was going to fight till about 35, reassess everything and just kind of see where I was in life and make that decision then. And we're almost there. I'm 34 now, but I just feel like it's that time. So I have no regrets. I had, like I said, had an amazing time in the fight game. Got in there and got to fight some of the best fighters in the world and was always pretty much right there at the top. But it's, like I said, it's just that time. And, I'm excited, man. I have a beautiful family. We just had our first baby girl. I have a beautiful wife. We just bought our dream home, got out of the city, got on a little bit of property. Life is good, man. I feel really good about everything and, just excited to see what's next for me, what's next for us. So it's that time.
Wow, that is great. And congratulations on the birth of your first child. How is she doing? Everyone okay?
Yeah, she's doing great. She's, knock on wood, she's a pretty good sleeper. I'm a good sleeper. My wife's a good sleeper. So we were kind of just praying that she got it. But she is. She's a good sleeper. She's a happy baby, real big cheese ball, smiling and making the funny faces all the time. And I feel blessed for sure. So mama does most of the work. I've been traveling a ton, so... You know, at this stage, obviously, it's tough. I wake up in the middle of the night, give her a little pat on the back and rub, and you're doing great, a little pet talk, and I'm back out. So, but yeah, everybody's doing good, man.
It's amazing. Another wrestler with a daughter. I don't know what it is about you wrestlers. Faber, of course, had one. I mean, everyone, every wrestler has a daughter, but that's amazing to hear. I'm very happy for you. In December, when we last saw you compete, there was a report that came out right after that you were done, that you were going to retire. However, it took a long time. It took like 6-7 months later for you to actually come out and say it. Why is that?
You know, I had talked to my teammates right after. I don't know who leaked it. That was supposed to be between us. I don't know if somebody overheard us or what, but you know, I wanted them to know that, but for me to go public with it was something I wanted to wait to do. You know, I just wanted to make sure after being out of a fight camp and, you know, going through obviously a loss, I just wanted to make sure my heart and my mindset was the same after giving it a bit of time. And I did that, and it's the same, man. It's time for me. Like I said, I just wanted to wait and make sure. So we did that, and everything's still right on track to what it was before. So it's just that time for me. I'm like I said, excited. So, you know, I get a lot of people coming up, and when they hear the news, they find out, it's, you get like a, oh man, I'm so sorry to hear that type thing. And I just want people to know, like, don't feel sorry. Like, this is my choice. I know in my heart and my mind, if I wanted to, I'd get in there and compete with the top guys in my division still. I'm choosing to retire. I'm choosing to make that decision and go on to the next chapter of my life. So, this is something I'm excited to do. So I just don't want people being like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. You know, this is my choice.
It's not a death, right? This is something that you're happy about. You're at peace with.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. You know, and, I think it's tough for fans. Maybe it's just tough for them to kind of express their feelings as far as, oh, I'm sorry, cause I'm excited to see you fight. You know, but it always comes off like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, it's like the death of you, basically, like you just said, you know, and it's not like that at all, man. This is my choice. And like I said, I'm excited to do it. So I had fun in the fight game. You know, we've done a ton of interviews over the time. Like like I said, got in there and fought some of the best guys, beat some of the best guys, had very close fights, you know, whether it's a loss or a win, you know, gone out there and got those quick knockouts, you know, so I've been through all of it in the fight game, you know, and it's just, like I said, it's just that time for me. So, I don't want people feeling sorry.
And just to paint the picture. So immediately after that fight in the locker room, you told your team that was most likely it.
Yeah. And I told them, like, look, these are the guys I wanted in my corner, my last fight. Some of my closest friends and just people that mean a lot to me in the fight game and in just in the world in general. But it was cool to have those guys there. But yeah, you know, we did a huddle after, and like I said, I don't know if somebody overheard us or somebody leaked it, but you know, it was basically me telling them, like, look, I just wanted to make sure you guys were all here for this. This is going to be my last fight. And you know, it was an honor and privilege to be able to, you know, train under you guys and be a part of the team with you guys and just, you know, do all that fun stuff. So, I mean, it was cool having those guys there throughout that whole camp and the lead up to the fight. It was just good times, man. Stuff I'll never forget.
You mentioned earlier in the interview, but it cut out very briefly. You said you thought about this a couple of years ago, but you were convinced to come back. Around what period was this? What fight? And who convinced you to come back?
Oh man, I can't remember what exactly fight it was, but it was probably a good 4 to 5 years ago even. You know, there was a point in my career where I was just kind of frustrated with the politics of the sport, you know, doing things I felt like I needed to do, but wasn't getting anywhere as far as pay goes and, you know, just as far as getting certain fights. And it was just frustrating having to last minute drop everything and fly to Brazil and, you know, or fly to a different country to do promo stuff when I wasn't told, you know. And so there was a couple of times where I had to leave doing something else. Like at one point I was in the back country and my managers were luckily able to get a hold of me, and I had to, you know, hike out, get to an airport. And I think that was the Aldo fight, and fly to Brazil for like 2 days to do media, but nobody had told me, you know. And so it's just, there was points of it that were so frustrating, you know. And we're not, you know, people don't realize we're not making millions of dollars like a lot of these other pro athletes, you know. And so it's just frustrating to have to drop everything at one point like that to do that stuff for not a ton of money, you know. Like I could be doing something I'm doing now, making great money and not have to deal with that stuff. So, you know, and I know that comes with any type of business, any type of career, there's always going to be frustrating parts of it. So, you know, I've just, over the years, there was just times that stuff kind of went on, and I was almost like, you know, I'm going to start my new business now. Like, I just want to get this stuff up and running, and I'm going to make the transition and actually talk to Faber. And he's like, dude, just fight for a couple more years, you know, just get a few more paychecks under the belt. He's like, just stash that money and then, you know, grow your brand a bit and then trying to make the transition. And that's actually what I did, you know. Help. I think the Conor fight obviously was a huge, fight for me was, you know, I wouldn't have gotten that fight if I would have stopped. So, you know, getting in there and being able to go against a legend like Conor and just step inside the octagon with them, you know, get a good payday. And that fight alone helped build my brand tremendously. So, you know, I think everything happens for a reason. And that was definitely one of those positives of staying in it. And, you know, I helped it. I think that really helped grow the business that I have now, just being able to have that brand, that name and the sport, and transition that into Fins and Feathers, and being able to grow that as well. It's just been key. So yeah, Faber is definitely the guy that's from the beginning of my career been that, you know, that leader and that kind of that guy that we've all looked up to. But for me, he's been a huge help in my career for sure.
You mentioned earlier that you don't have any regrets, and I 100% believe you, but you also just mentioned the Conor fight, and we know the circumstances under which you took that fight and how little time you had to prepare for that fight, which was the biggest fight of your career. Do you still think about that from time to time? Man, if I had a full training camp, what would my life be like if I, you know, had a proper amount of time to prepare, if I won that fight, if I beat him, if I was the first guy to beat him? Does that not creep up into your thoughts and your dreams sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, I think about that stuff all the time, but I mean, I don't have any regrets as far as taking that fight. Like, you know, that obviously was a 10-day notice fight. Of course, I would rather have had a full training camp, but, you know, I would have been stupid to turn that fight down. You know, who knows? I could have went out there and knocked him out in the first 30 seconds, you know, or, you know, I could have won that fight. But it's a fight that, like I said, it helped grow my brand, you know, and just, it's just something that's so cool to be able to look back on. Like, my daughter's going to look back on that one day and be like, that's a huge fight, you know? Like, being able to walk out to Aaron Lewis playing my walkout song. Like, I don't think the UFC's even done that again, but that was just something I'll never, ever forget. And, you know, I always have that. Like, that's something that's going to be me. That's me for the rest of my life. So, as far as, like, regrets is, like, as far as taking that fight, I definitely don't have any. But, yeah, I mean, obviously I wish I could have gotten a full training camp. And, you know, and I think about that. Like, what would life be like how would it be different if I had won that fight? You know, and I think about that, but like I said, everything happens for a reason. Maybe things would be different for the worse, you know? And so I just try to stay positive with those types of mindsets and always think about, you know, like I said, everything happens for a reason. And if it wasn't meant to be, it's not going to happen. So it's all good.
You had an amazing stretch, like 2012 to 2013, where I think you won five in a row. The team was on fire. You and, mm-hmm. and Benavidez and Dillashaw, I'm like, you guys were all fighting sometimes on the same card, one after the next, killing everyone. Was that like the best stretch of your career? Was that when you were the happiest, or was it another time that we may not know about?
Yeah, I think that was kind of the peak of my career. I mean, we had so many top guys that were, you know, all basically training for the exact same thing. There was, you know, I feel like my system was on point all around. And, you know, I don't know. I think that was probably, yeah, like you said, the happiest point in my career. You know, and it was probably the most motivated. I'd say probably all the way up even till the second Aldo fight. But yeah, man, it's just, it's peaks and valleys. That's going to happen. I had that all through my wrestling career too. There'd be times where, you know, it's almost like you're going through the motion. You know, it's, you know what you're supposed to do. You know what you're supposed to feel. You know what you're supposed to think. But a lot of the times that stuff's almost uncontrollable. Like I know I need to be positive. I need to feel like I'm excited to do this, but it's 6 a.m. I'm starving. I'm dehydrated. I don't really want to get up and go do a 6-mile run. You know, like, it's not something I'm excited to do, but you know, you kind of just go through those points in your career where it's like, I call it like the peaks and valleys, it's the low spot, you know, and the times, those are the times you want to quit. Those are the times that it's not fun. And, you know, when you can get through those, especially someone that's coming up in their career, like for me, that was, you know, say that's going through junior high or high school. You know, if I wouldn't have pushed through that and continued, I wouldn't have got a scholarship to go to college to wrestle, you know, and if I would have done the same thing in college, you know, through any type of tough times, I probably wouldn't have made the transition and gotten picked up by the UFC. And, you know, I basically wouldn't have built a brand and be where I'm at right now, able to do the things that I love in life and be comfortable. So it's, you know, you go through those peaks and valleys, but I feel like You know, the people that are going to be successful and be able to live that lifestyle they want to live, those are the people that fight through that and continue. So, you know, I've done that throughout my entire career, and I think I've finally gotten to the point where, you know, it's awesome for me to be able to feel comfortable doing something else that I absolutely love to do. I got that safety net, and I get to have fun in life now. You know, I've busted my butt since I was 5 years old, wrestling every single year from five all the way up through college. You know, day after I graduated, move up, start training full time for fighting. And, up until now, basically I've been a top level athlete killing myself. So I feel like it's for me, it's awesome to be able to think back on all that, the tough times that I've gone through, all the adversity, all those peaks and valleys. And, you know, to get to this point where we're at in life now, like I'm 34, like, you know, obviously there's not a lot of guys that can retire from anything at the age of 34, you know? So to be able to do that and just be comfortable in life and feel like I have things figured out is, for me, it's like, this is my dream. This is my, you know, this is me living the dream on my end. So it's great, man. I feel, like I said, I feel blessed. I feel lucky that I had such a great career. I had, you know, so many positive people in my life that were, you know, helping me train, you know, pushing me through those peaks and valleys. And then just basically the technical sides of it. So, for me, it was just something I'll look back on. Like I said, never forget. And, I'm always going to be thankful. So life is good.
You obviously had the one, PED infraction, but I respect so much how you handled that. And we spoke about it afterwards, about how you came out. You didn't make excuses. You didn't hide from it. You said your piece. You went away and then you came back. I mean, you really put out the blueprint how to handle something like that, a very tough situation. Has the hate from all, like, I know it could be very nasty online and people bring it up all the time. Do you feel like that's gone away?
Yeah, it's gone. I feel like it's been gone now, for a while, but. You know, that was an extremely tough time for me. It's, you know, it's nothing any athlete ever wants to be associated with. You know, and so going through that time, you know, that's just another one of those peaks and valleys I was talking about a second ago. You know, you just got to get through it. You got to find a way to stay positive. You know, I made a mistake. It was an accident, and, you know, I owned up to it. I'm not, you know, there was a couple thoughts going through my head, like, should I just call this quits now? Is this a time to retire? And, you know, I just did not want to leave my career like that. You know, that's not me. All this hard work that I've gone through, all the stuff that I've put myself through and done to get to the point that I'm at now, like all that would be for nothing. So for me to come back, I wanted to get two more fights. And I actually wanted to spread them out over a 2 year period, you know, just get a fight last year, fight this year and then call it. But, you know, getting the two fights in last year was good. You know, obviously not wanting to go out on a loss like that sucks. But, you know, I knew what the goal was, that talking with my wife, talking with other friends and family members, like that's, I said, look, no matter what, this is what it's going to be. I don't want to be the guy that's sitting there chasing a win. You know, obviously, like I said, don't want to go out on a loss. But, you know, getting in there and fighting a guy like Volkanovski, like, it's a tough fight. I mean, the guy, you guys saw what he did to Aldo. He's not some slump, you know. And so for me, I'm at peace with it, you know, obviously. I've done what I needed to prove that I'm one of the best in the world. And, you know, felt good getting in there and fighting. It just wasn't my night. So. All in all, man, I just wanted to get those last two fights in and, you know, I definitely could have quit during that crappy 2 year, suspension. But, like I said, I just didn't want that to be my last legacy. So getting there and fighting at least a couple more times was the goal and we got it done.
Did you ever imagine that you'd be retired and Uriah Faber would still be winning in the UFC? How crazy is this?
Yeah, I mean, even when Faber retired, I knew he'd even talked about it with all of us. That wasn't going to be the last time Faber was going to step in there. But yeah, man, it's definitely crazy. I didn't think that would ever be the case, but Faber's a crazy dude, man. He'll get in there and compete anytime, any place, anywhere. So Yeah, that was it's cool to see him get out there and get that big knockout, man. That's he deserves it.
Do you think you'll be a part of the team, the gym, or do you live now too far away?
You know, I live about an hour away now, and it's definitely with a newborn right now, it's not super convenient trying to sneak away. But yeah, man, I think in the future I'll definitely still be a part of things. Like I said, the Fins and Feathers business, me and a good buddy partner or business partner of mine started. You know, this is something we're putting a lot of time and energy into. You know, maybe when things start slowing down a bit, we can either bring more people on to kind of take the loads off of our backs a bit. I would love to get back in there and you know, help guys train or help coach or, you know, just give any two cents that I can. So we'll see.
For those that don't know, where can they learn more about your business? You said it's Fins and Feathers, right?
Yeah, Fins and Feathers. Both Fins and Feathers is spelled with a Z. We're actually excited. We just teamed up with Clay Guida too, who's a good buddy of ours. And we're kind of adding the fishing side of Fins and Feathers. We've already had some fishing stuff, but Guida is going to be taking over more of that for us now. He's got a really cool business model, Gills and Thrills with Guida. And so basically, so Fins and Feathers, for people that don't know, we basically put together all kinds of cool hunting and fishing trips all over the world. And then we have a bunch of different celebrity, pro staff members that love hunting, love fishing. And, they go on the trips with these clients. So Guida's, business model basically is, you know, if there's a big concert or sporting event, say there's a big UFC fight in Florida, the day before the fight, he takes guys out, goes fishing with them all day. Next day, takes them to the fights, takes them to the after parties. It's kind of just a cool entertainment and fishing type business. So, that's definitely the next branch of Fins and Feathers that we just launched. So, super excited to be working with Clay. I love that guy. I mean, you guys have seen him on here, just full of energy, super positive at all times. Just a great guy to work with. So, for people that want to check it out, you can go to finsandfeathers.com. And like I said, Fins and Feathers is spelled with a Z. We also have an Instagram, Fins and Feathers Guides, if you guys want to keep up with, just a lot of the adventures, photos, stuff like that. So, we do a lot of stuff on YouTube as well. I have a personal YouTube channel. Where actually, if I'm there hunting with clients, I'll usually vlog it and, I do all the editing myself, throw these things up on my YouTube channel. So you can kind of see how these adventures unfold, pretty much from my point of view. So, so it's always fun for me getting to go out there and film and, you know, hunt and fish with these guys and then throw these up for you guys to kind of check out. So if anyone wants to check them out, then that's where you can find it.
Well done, my man. Congratulations on a great career. It was a lot of fun covering it from the WEC days all the way to that massive fight against Conor, UFC 189. They never did a live band walkout leading up to that fight, and they still haven't done one since. So that's a nice little feather in your cap, so to speak. I appreciate you doing this very much. Congrats on the baby once again, the new career, and hopefully somewhere down the line we can run into you again. All the best to you, Chad.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Ariel. Thank you for all the years of all the cool stuff that we've got to do, all the interviews and stuff like that. So I appreciate you guys having me on. And, yeah, anytime you guys want to chat about anything, just hit me up.
All right. Thank you very much.
Get it in. All right. Thanks, bro.
All right. There he is, Chad Money Mendez, one of the all-time greats dating back to the WEC days at 145 pounds and, of course, longtime contender at 145 as well in the UFC. Great career he had. Announced his retirement officially on July 9th, but credit to Farah Hanoun, the journalist who reported back in December that he was going to announce his retirement in the coming weeks. It ended up being a few months. Six knockouts for him are tied for second most in UFC featherweight history. And, of course, his fight against Jose Aldo, that was the unanimous fight of the year back in 2014. I was at that fight back at UFC 179, a tremendous battle against Aldo. Had the first fight against Aldo at 142, got knocked out in the final seconds of the very first round, but then had the rematch against Aldo in Brazil. That one went the distance. That was a great fight. And he's had some amazing performances back in the day. There's like a fly in this studio that keeps going on my head. Is anyone noticing this? It just like is very itchy. on my head. All right. So thank you very much to Chad Mendes. In a matter of moments, we're going to be joined by the former reigning defending UFC strawweight champion, the one and only Joanna Jędrzejczyk. It's been a while since we talked to Joanna, so I'm looking forward to talking to her. And following Joanna, we're going to be joined by the great Steve-O. Yes, Steve-O. One name. Steve-O. Legend. Wild Boys. Jackass. I mean, just a great guy. Actually, he did an interview recently with Dana White. We'll talk to him a bit about that. Hung out with Jorge Masvidal. So a lot to get to with Steve-O. After that, Michael Bisping. Talk about his new book, Quitters Never Win. Felicia Spencer, who's on her way to Edmonton, her home country of Canada, where she will meet one Chris Cyborg this Saturday at UFC 240. Dan Hooker will join us at the bottom of the hour, and we will reconnect, hopefully, with Walt Harris, who was supposed to join us at the top of the show to talk about his big win over Alexei Oleinik, but we had some connection issues there. But we will get to him at the top of the 4 o'clock hour. All right, Corporate Jake, settle down over there. Let's go now to Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who's kind enough to join us from Florida, talk to her about what's next for her and all those things and more. There she is, Joanna, who I do believe cut her hair recently, right? Joanna, did you cut your hair?
I did.
It looks great. Yes. Thanks, why did you do it?
Thanks,
it was time?
Just for no reason. Just for no reason. Because of all the photo shoots and training sessions, my hair got so weak. I had very long hair. And, you know, I was, you know what? I was like trying to make this decision for like 6 months or longer. And I just did it. I said I'm supposed to just do like a treatment, like a recover my hair. And I just said to my hairdresser, hey, cut it, man. Just in 1 second, like this.
I like it.
And
new
I like
year,
it,
new
man.
You.
I like it. Oh, yeah, I feel great. I feel great. That's amazing.
Okay, so there have been reports that you're going to fight Michelle Waterson October 12th in San Francisco. Can you confirm this for us?
Oh, yeah, it's all over the news.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I'm going to face Michelle Waterson.
Yeah, how do you feel about this matchup?
In October. That's a good fight, man. I really like Michelle Waterson. We have very good relationship. We support each other, but it's time to make a business, you know, take care of the business. And she's such a warrior, such a talented and great athlete, an amazing woman, mother and wife. And, you know, I'm very happy to face her in my next fight. That's it.
Why did you decide to move down back to 115?
Because it was my goal. Like, people don't know that the fight with Valentina Shevchenko was only a super fight, and I had only 6 weeks to prepare for that fight. We know, we all know what was going on before that fight. This that fight was on and off, and I'm back to 115. That's it.
Okay, so you never had plans of sticking around at 125?
I'm still having, but I wanna go back down to 115 and beat the after the victory over Michelle Waterson. I wanna get the title shot.
How do you feel about doing that weight cut again?
I'm good. I started my diet. I mean, like diet. I hate this word, but I eat healthy. Actually, my weight is pretty good. I came down to Florida for 4 or 5 weeks of training. In the middle of August, I fly back to Poland for my birthday, refresh my head and do some business, shoot some commercials. And I will be back to American Top Team in September. I will have 6 weeks to finish my camp and be ready.
Okay. And you know, we recently saw, did we lose? Okay. You're back. You see me? Yeah.
Yes. I see you. So sorry. My sister was calling me on the other phone.
Oh, no problem.
And she's still.
No problem. We recently saw Jessica Andrade beat Rose Namajunas, and you have a win over Jessica Andrade. When you saw that, did that give you more motivation to go down back to 115 to try to get that rematch?
Of course.
Were you surprised that she beat Rose?
You know what? Like, people, Rose did such a good, amazing job in the first round. But Jessica Andrade, she stick to her plan. Actually, today I watched her stories of her training. She's fighting very soon. And she was never a striker, but watching her training on this level, it's not so good. She's the champ. She should represent top high world level, but she does not. And, you know, this Chinese chick is very tough. So I cannot wait what's going to happen at the end of August. But I feel sorry for Rose. She was doing good, but she didn't do her job. I mean, when we're talking about the takedown defense, you know, she didn't do a great job.
It was a very scary finish when she fell on her head like that,
oh,
right?
Oh, man. I think she's happy that she can walk and she's still alive.
Right.
And I'm happy for her.
Yes.
I'm happy for her. This is what I texted her. I messaged her and I gave her so much respect. You know, outside the octagon, outside the gym, we are just humans and we support each other. And this is what I'm trying to do.
Wow. So you...
And I was honest with that message and she wrote me back and you know, that was really nice.
So this was a private message that you sent her?
Of course it was.
Wow. And do you guys message each other? Because I think there's an idea out there that you're like rivals or something like that. Do you message each other privately often?
No, we do not. You know, we do not. We do not. The first time it was after her losing to Jessica Andrade.
Oh, wow. That's very nice. And she responded back to you?
Of course she did.
Wow. And so just to be clear about something that you just said moments ago, you were saying that you saw Jessica Andrade's training and you don't feel like
yes.
It's impressive?
It's not. I know her good side is her wrestling, you know, and the takedowns, but striking was never her good side, but you know, she can throw some good punches and good combinations. She's very strong. She's always going forward, but I'm not impressed.
Okay. So do you think she's going to lose to Zhang?
I don't know. That Chinese chick is very tough.
Yeah.
She's very tough.
You're impressed by her.
I wish Andrea lots of luck, but we'll see what's going to happen. You know, it's going to be very interesting fight between these two.
I heard that Zhang was actually trying to get in touch with the UFC to fight you, that before this title fight came about that she was trying to call you out. Did you hear of that as well?
You know what? I don't respond to all of these call outs. This is how I'm going to call it. I do business, you know, and I don't like talks to someone or call someone on the internet, you know. This is, I'm not doing this, so that's why I didn't respond on that. And I've got some offers to fight her, but I have different goals. And if we're gonna meet, in the title fight.
And what about Claudia Gadelha? She's been talking about wanting to fight you again, saying that you guys hate each other.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't hear that. Like I said, I'm out of it, you know.
You don't pay attention.
Man, I beat her twice. What she wants.
Yeah.
What she wants. I beat her twice and I think she doesn't remember what happened in the second fight. And you know, there was lots of bad blood between us too. And she can say whatever she wants to, but she lost, man. I beat her. I beat her badly. So.
No interest in that fight ever again.
Of course not. Of course I'm not. I don't need that fight.
So
she needs me. They all need me. Like, look, man, when I lost to Rose, look how many girls called me out, you know, like, hey, girl, hey, man, they all want to fight me because I'm big name. Otherwise, I ask, why do you want to fight me? Because I'm the big name. But now I'm going to headline the show in San Francisco with Michelle Watterson. We both are worth it, you know. We means a lot to the UFC. And I'm very thankful to the UFC for giving me another chance. And, you know, I'm going to headline the show. That's another, like, good dream. Dream is coming true, you know.
Do you take that as a compliment when you have so many people calling you out? Like, oh, okay, they all want the rub
for
me.
Of course I do. I know why they want to fight me, like I said. Of course, if you're going to ask Gadelha or other girls, why do you want to fight John? Oh, because I just want to beat her, you know. No, they want to fight me because I'm big name. You know, I can open the door to big money and to big business, you know. But that's this is not my way to do that. You never You never heard me like calling someone, you know?
Right.
Never, ever.
115 is very interesting. Michelle Waterson really wanted that title shot. She didn't get it. They gave it to Zhang, and it seems like Tatiana Suarez is out there too, but maybe she's injured for a bit because she has a neck issue coming off her win over Nina Ansaroff.
Yeah.
Have you been told that the winner of this fight between you and Michelle Waterson will be next for a title fight?
Okay, I tell you something. Let's bring it out. Like before the fight, after I lost the second fight to Rose Namajunas, I wanted to move up to the flyweight division because me and my coaches, my team, my family, they all know how much I have to struggle myself to get to 115 because I'm not naturally 115er. And the thing is that I wanted to move up, but you know, UFC told me to stay in 115. That's why I fought Tisha Torres, and if I was going to get the win, and I won that fight, I was going to fight for the belt, but then some different things happened. Then this fight with Valentina Shevchenko came out, so I took that super fight, and you know, I was out for a little bit, for a while, because I wanted to refresh my head, my body, and honestly, I feel the fire, man. I know people can say shit, but ask people from my gym how I train every day, you know, how motivated I am. And I'm different. I feel different, you know. I feel like the whole universe is right here, you know. It's behind my back and I got it here in my power. And that's the thing. So good things coming. And I was going to wait for the title shot, but you know, I don't want to wait longer to get a fight. So that's why I decided to fight with Michelle Waterson. And I think she's a great opponent for my next fight. I call this fight like a commercial fight. Michelle Waterson is very known in the States. She's such a great athlete with so many experience. She's the former Invicta champion. She's well-spoken, beautiful, and people love her, fans love her. I feel the same way. So, let's do it. And I'm super excited. That's the fight to make.
You said that you needed a bit of a break after the Valentina fight in December.
Of course. And I said that at the press conference, and I did that, and I went on vacation. I did so many different stuff. I released my book. There is my movie. There is my movie coming out at the end of the year. And I did so many things. I refreshed my mind. I was training only for myself. If you jump from camp to camp, you don't have time to learn. But honestly, for the last few months, I had time to learn and like bring new stuff, and I just feel great, man. I just feel great.
What's the movie about?
About me, like
a documentary, or
HBO was following me for 2-3 years, so it's a documentary.
In English or in Polish?
And I watched that. It's in Polish. It's going to be in English as well.
Wow.
It's supposed to be like small project, but I'm going to release this movie in the theaters. So that's great, man.
Wow. And so they followed
you.
We're going
worldwide.
So they followed you when you were champion, and then when you lost the belt, throughout all that?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, they did. They did.
Cutting weight and all that too?
No, man. That was my fight. And
okay.
I'm happy that you brought that out. And the thing is, like, now I'm like, fuck, I wish there was someone with me, but it was my fight, and nobody could do that, you know, and nobody believed that I was going to make this weight, but I did that, 15 hours, 15 pounds.
Oh.
I did that, man.
Which one was that? That was the first Rose fight?
Yes, it was. Man, and that time I was like, everyone get out. It was only me and my ex-nutritionist, you know, and even that person was sitting there with me in the bathroom. I was in the bathtub, and that person was like, just give up. And I was like, I'm not gonna give up. I'm the champ. I need to represent myself. You know, I'm going to be on weight. I was praying for the miracle, and you know,
and you made
but
it.
I paid the ultimate price,
right?
And but that's okay. We're moving forward. It's behind me, man.
Are you going to work with a new nutritionist to get back down to 115 for this fight?
You know what? I was working with George Lockhart, but I'm using my knowledge as well. I do some small adjustments. My friend from Poland is helping me a lot. But you know what? I'm super busy. When you train two, three times a day, you really don't have time to cook, but I just prepared this amazing zucchini pasta and meatballs.
Oh, wow.
But I cook, man, so but I might get some prep meals just to save more time for recovery between the training sessions. But we will see. We will see. I probably will be working with George Lockhart. I really like the way they are, the whole team, how they cook during fight week. But we will see. We will see. I'm going to be for the next 2.5 weeks longer in Florida, then go home, and I will make all the decisions. You know, now I signed with the new management group, so I let them do the work, and I'm very happy, you know, that I'm going to have less headache.
Yes, congratulations on signing with Balanji Group. They have a great team over there.
Yes, they do. And you know, for a while I was managing this myself, and it's time to like drop a little bit work from my shoulders. But I'm trying to keep eye on everything. You know, it's all about the trust. But sometimes it's difficult to trust. But I wanna trust.
Yes.
And that's the thing. And like Jennifer, she's really my role model. She's a very good businesswoman, and I want to be a good businesswoman in the future, and that's the point. So, but I feel like it was the right decision.
I agree. It's good to have someone backing you.
Let's see what's going to happen, what's the next few weeks and months are going to bring into my business and my life working with Balanji. But I'm very happy. So, guys, thank you for having me in your team.
So the plan
like
is
officially.
Yes, officially. So the plan is fight October 12th, win that fight, and then you fight for the belt.
Yes, sir.
All right. We look forward to that. Thank you, Ioana.
Cannot wait. Thank you so much.
It's been great to catch up. Do I have your what? Oh, yes. Here it is. Boom. How about that?
Hell yeah. Isn't signed.
It's not signed.
Where are we right now? I'm going to New York in 2 weeks to watch Kovnatsky's fight.
Oh, I'm in Connecticut at ESPN. But if you want to come join us here, it'd be nice to have you.
Okay, I might. I might.
All right. Okay, I'll talk to Balanji. Thank you, Ioana. We appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Thank you,
all
guys.
The best to you.
Thank you for the support. Bye. Take care.
Okay. There she is. Ioana Jacek, former champ, perhaps soon to be future champ. October 12th, San Francisco against Michelle Waterson, a potential number one contender fight. Of course, Tatiana Suarez factors into that story as well, but she might be out due to the neck injury. So we'll see what happens there. Great to catch up with Ioana again. All right. I am so excited about this, my friends. I've been watching this man on television for quite some time, and late last week I got a FaceTime call from Jorge Masvidal and his team, and he said someone wanted to speak to you, and there he was sitting at a restaurant, the great Steve-O, the legend himself, and there he is in the flesh on the Helwani Show. Steve-O, man, how are you?
Hey, I'm very well. What an honor, man. Thank you so much. I know people are probably a bit surprised to see me pop up on here, but I am an avid fan.
Okay,
and,
yes.
And I have quite a bit to talk to you about as well, so. Oh. Let's get into it.
All right, let's do it. Okay, well, first let me ask you, how big of a fan are you? Like, are you the kind of guy that's watching every week, every fight night, start to finish? Like, how would you categorize your fandom?
Every week. I mean, every week that there is an event, absolutely.
Sure.
And
okay.
Most Saturdays I'm out performing on my tour, which means that I'll get out of the venue after my meet and greet about 1 or 2 in the morning. And invariably, I avoid Instagram. I avoid everything that could tip me off as to the results. And then I go on the on-demand and I watch from start to finish. So I'm watching fights. I mean, I'll scroll in between the fights, but I watch every second of every fight.
Wow.
And that'll be up until like 5 or 6 in the morning.
How long have you been a fan for?
As far as being a really serious fan, probably only 3 or 4 years, throughout 3 years. But I, about this watching after the fact, I'm just in that position where I have to watch it after the fact on demand. The most important thing I feel that I need to say to you, and specifically to ESPN,
okay,
is that as a fan who cannot see the fights live so often, when I get, you know, when I get to the on-demand page on ESPN Plus, and thanks to ESPN for I haven't seen blacked out in your area, which was a chronic problem with FS1. Okay. But ESPN, for God's sakes, ESPN, please do not make the thumbnail for the fight, which I'm going to watch, indicate who won the fight.
Oh.
Like what? Yeah, like, it's insane. You know, like, here I'm going to watch the fight because I care about it. I'm interested in it. You know, I don't want to know the result. And then when I go to click on main card, like, it's like the picture, it's an image of a guy like, yeah, you know, like, it gives away, they're giving away who won the fight. Also,
okay,
when it's not on ESPN Plus, but rather when it's on real ESPN, you know, I click on the homepage and then here's the results. They just got it.
These are real concerns, right, from a real fan.
Right. Very, very real.
And this
concerns
has happened often.
Yeah. I'm often, consuming this content on demand and finding
every time.
Out. Not every time, but, and I kind of blur my eyes a little bit. It's not always super obvious. A lot of the time it's just somebody punching someone else, but more, there's been times like the Korean Zombie fight totally gave it away.
Oh my gosh. I know a lot of the programming people are watching right now. We need to rectify this. We can't have you.
Yes.
You know, your fight's being spoiled. You're trying to consume the fights. You're going on the app. You're a paying customer. We need to do this the right
Correct.
Way.
Right. And I watch ESPN Plus on the very first fight night.
Oh wow.
I bought every single pay-per-view. I really don't miss a fight. Candidly, I haven't seen every prelim, but I see most of them.
I appreciate that. Now, you said 3-4 years you caught the bug. What got you into it?
I think it was just the hype around Ronda Rousey.
Mm, okay.
You know, like I started getting really interested, and I would, there's just the hype around Ronda Rousey for sure.
I noticed on your social media, especially on Twitter, like you're writing, like when it's a big card, you're tweeting all about it. You're reacting to it. I saw you react to the Masvidal knockout.
Yeah.
And then you were hanging out with Masvidal last week. How did that happen? Are you guys boys?
I was so blown away by his performance against Ben Askren. And I just happened to be in Miami or headed to Miami. So I just thought, screw it. Let me send a tweet to Jorge Masvidal. Are you in town? And he replied. He replied, and he was excited to meet up. So, we did just that. And, man, it was such a fun time.
Wow.
To talk MMA with Jorge. It was great.
That's incredible. So you just you have never met the guy before. You just tweeted him. He replied, and then you hung out. What did you guys do together?
He was doing a shoot with our buddy Hans, who I've known for many, many years.
Okay.
And so he invited me to go hang out at the UFC gym where they were doing that shoot. And then we went to his manager Abe's office, and then we went out to sushi, and we just talked fighting the whole time.
My God. And can I just ask quickly about this shirt, the Celine Dion shirt that you were wearing? Because I am from Montreal. In fact, I think you're in Montreal right now, right?
I actually fly to Montreal tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
I fly to Montreal tomorrow, and I'm performing at the Just for Laughs Festival.
Oh, my gosh.
At the Olympia Theater on Wednesday night week.
That's a historic event. Yes, I know you're doing the bucket list tour right now, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well done. What about that shirt, though? Where did you get that shirt? It's incredible, that Celine Dion shirt. Can we show it again, please? There it is. I mean, look at this. It's
sure.
Incredible.
Yeah, if you see the whole shirt, it's this like sort of a parody of a Slayer album cover, and it's all heavy metal, and it says "My Heart Will Go On" at the bottom.
Unbelievable!
I saw it. I do a meet and greet after all my shows, and a fan came through the line, was wearing the shirt, and I loved it so much. I Googled it, I tracked it down, and I bought it myself. I was able to find it on Amazon.
Wow. Okay. So
yeah.
Of course, a lot of people know you because of the Jackass days, Wild Boys, you know, you're fearless. You've done a lot of crazy things. I came across a video. So apparently you really want to have cauliflower ear, and you enlisted
Correct.
The help of Chuck Liddell. I think we have the footage of this to try to help you get cauliflower ear, but it's not the traditional way of wrestling or tugging on the ear.
Right.
You had him hit a golf ball off your ear. Here's the footage right here. This looks like the most painful thing I've ever seen. Why, A, do you want cauliflower so badly, and why did you do it this way?
I think it's hilarious. Oh, and, you know, I just think that it's super funny to want to have cauliflower ear. It's a crazy stunt. And I became buddies with Chuck Liddell, so I asked him if he'd be willing to do it. And using my ear as a golf tee was a colorful and creative, fun way to try. Of course, it was scary, too. And I remember having a conversation with Dana White at the Woodley Till fight, where Dana White hooked me up with cage side seats for Woodley Till. And for whatever reason, that was the one event where Dana White declined to go into the press room. And so that made him available for us to just hang out. And I got his feedback. I wanted him to weigh in on my plans to get cauliflower ear. And I told him about the golf club. This was before it happened. And he said, you know, the ear is really easy to rip off. He had a story about Matt Serra and somebody getting their ear ripped off. But I didn't listen to him. I went through with it, and I got away with it. And I made a little bit of progress, but there's more work to do.
Okay, so you're going to try to make this happen. You're not done.
Yeah, I want to keep going until my ear looks great.
Okay, great or not, depending on your taste.
Right.
Speaking of Dana, you recently did this show where you ride around in a van with a guest, and you had Dana with you. He's actually rocking the ESPN Plus shirt. There it is, right over there. And you were throwing out, like, you know, celebrity. What, by the way, what is the name of this show? Because this is a great idea. Like, the setup that you have, I'm actually quite jealous of it. Tell me the name of the show, but also, you also made a special call out in this video, which is the way you kind of came at me. In hindsight, I went back and looked. You tweeted me this, but I missed it. I apologize. So tell me the name of the show and the call out that you put Dana on the spot about.
Right. This, I hope that I didn't burn a bridge with Dana by doing that. But, this is a format that I've come up with, to do a mobile podcast, and I call it Wild Rides with Steve-O. And, I'm still just tinkering around with it. Thank you. I wanted to get Dana into the van, and my first question for him was, why has there not been any celebrity Contender Series, Celebrity Ultimate Fighter? It seems like a no-brainer that it would be like a dude's version of Dancing with the Stars. And I had written down that question before it came out that Justin Bieber was trying to challenge Tom Cruise to a fight in the octagon. And I thought, oh man, I've got to jump on this. And it just so happened that Dana White's assistant reached out to invite me to the season 3 Contender Series premiere. And so I jumped on it and I said, hey, can I get Dana to jump in my van so I can ask him a question about celebrity MMA? And when we were in the van, I said, you know, I think Tom Cruise is afraid of Justin Bieber, but Dana, I'm here to tell you that I am not. And I'm calling his little bitch ass out is what I said. Dana, like, it was so clear that Dana wanted nothing to do with this. And in hindsight, I feel a little bit badly for putting him on the spot. I hope I didn't create any ill will with him. But I just think it's funny. And I told him, I said, I think that to put me in the octagon with Justin Bieber would be an exciting fight. And I'll tell you why. Because I really believe Justin Bieber can throw a mean punch and I can take one.
Wow.
Which is such an absurd way to promote a fight.
Sure.
And, you know, for God's sakes, I'm in my 40s and you know, Dana didn't want any part of it. He was saying, I don't know what commission would put this on. He's like, you might have to go to Mississippi or something. But yeah, I kind of bullied him into as the best I could to make it seem as though he was excited about it. And it was just kind of a gag, and it was fun and funny. But I'm just a big fan of UFC, of Dana, of you know, all things MMA.
Do you have beef with Justin Bieber?
I do not. Okay. I do not have any beef whatsoever. My only motivation for calling him out was that my fiance and I have a dream to buy land and open up our own animal sanctuary. And I feel that if that were to happen, I think Justin Bieber would absolutely mop the floor with me. But I believe that there's enough money to be made that if it's a beating that I would happily take to bring in the, you know, a large amount of money to get our animal sanctuary going.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate your honesty. You didn't fabricate some kind of feud here. You're being 100% honest. All right. We'll see. I kind of know someone who knows Bieber, so I'll try to put in a good word for you if the opportunity arises.
And if a fight in the octagon is not in the cards, there is also this. I know Justin Bieber's a big ping pong fanatic.
Okay.
And I am the reigning, defending, undisputed celebrity ping pong champion of the world.
Oh.
There's a new tournament going on. It's the Celebrity Ping Pong Championship, and I've just successfully defended my title against Machine Gun Kelly.
Oh.
And I'm looking for a new challenger. And if Justin wants to school me in ping pong, I invite him to try.
All right. Well, never say never. Do you get it?
Right. Yeah, it's never too late to say you're sorry.
Right. Or that. all right. That was good stuff. That was great. Machine Gun Kelly, by the way, another celebrity fan, a big fan of Stipe Miocic. Is there one fighter, Steve-O, you know he's fighting, I have to watch this live, I have to go out of my way, like, do you have a favorite right now?
I mean, I watch them all. Okay. I watch them all. And, I wanted to just say, because you just had Joanna on before me, that, she actually beat Jessica Andrade, huh?
She did, yeah, UFC 211.
That's just so fucking incredible, man. Jessica Andrade is looking pretty unbeatable.
Yeah.
And, Joanna just seems so much smaller. That's a real testament to what, a true legend Joanna is. So my favorite fighters, I just think, I love to hate Colby Covington as much as everybody else.
Oh, yes.
I think as far as like the, you know, personalities go, Jorge Masvidal just became the hottest ticket in MMA.
Correct.
I mean, for God's sakes, that guy is classic. I'm such a fan of his. Who else do I love? I think Johnny Walker's the fight for John Jones.
Whoa.
You know, I think, of course, he's going to have to, what did Jorge said at dinner the other night? That, they got to feed Johnny Walker, maybe one or two more bums and then give him John.
Wow.
He called him bums. Yeah, I love Jorge. But Johnny Walker, I'm excited to see. Who else? I got respect for the way Ben Askren took that defeat. I know that's, I think there's a big lesson to be learned in that, you know. That's just, having class is important, man.
And let me ask you about this weekend. Max Holloway, Frankie Edgar, who's your pick?
I really like Max, man. I think, I'm going to go with Max.
Okay. Big fight for the 145-pound title. By the way, this is not MMA related, but I saw the amazing documentary about you and your trials and tribulations and your sobriety. How are you doing these days? How are you feeling? How's the sobriety going?
I just turned 11 years sober.
Wow.
And
well done.
I'm very, very grateful for that. As far as how I feel goes, the 40s is doing its thing, man. I just turned 45 years old, and that's its own, its own beast. But yeah, sobriety's great, and I'm really happy.
Do you still keep in touch with the Jackass crew, Johnny and all those guys?
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah, for sure. We're next year. The fall of next year will mark exactly 20 years since Jackass first premiered on MTV.
Wow.
And we're actively trying to figure out what we might do to commemorate that anniversary. It might be something small. It might be something big. I really don't know. But we're all kind of excited about it, and we've all been close in touch.
That used to be a must-see TV. I don't want to date you, but when I was in high school.
Don't worry.
You're not that much older than me, but it was incredible. And watching the first movie that came out, all my friends and I went to the theater. It's kind of surreal to be talking to you right now, if I'm being honest. And it's so cool.
I appreciate that a lot, man.
Yeah.
I really do. And I feel like there's so much more. I just saw this news about John Jones. John Jones came to my show when I was in Albuquerque.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going to be back in Albuquerque actually next month. And we plan to meet up and maybe film something together. I'm actually going to drive the van out there, so maybe I'll get him in there.
Oh, wow.
But, I'm really rooting for John Jones. When I saw his fight against Gustafson, the number two, and he had the Queen song.
Yep.
That was so poetic. It was so meaningful. Like every lyric there just like really was fitting. And I'm rooting for him a lot.
Well, we're rooting for you, and maybe you could come on in the future, and now we can get the sort. Now we got like the fandom stuff out of the way, but you're very knowledgeable, and so I love your insight in the way you view the sport, and I love how much you love the sport. So this was a real treat. I really appreciate you doing this.
Hey, for sure.
And I'm going to tell the people at ESPN to fix that app on your behalf for you only.
Please, thank you,
Steve-O. You're the man. Thank you so much for this.
Hey.
And the tour is the bucket list tour. It's going to Montreal. Where can people learn more, find out more about where you're going to be going this summer?
I'm Steve-O on all platforms with respective verification check marks. Steve-O.com is the home for my whole tour schedule. And it's an honor, man, and thank you. I can show you my calendar on my phone, and every UFC event is marked on there.
I love it.
Yeah, I don't miss one, man. So I'd love to talk about it more in the future, and thank you.
All right. All the best, Steve-O. Thank you very much for doing this, and good luck.
For sure. Take
all right,
care.
There
you
he
too.
Is. The legend, the living legend himself, Steve-O on the program. Where else do you get that kind of stuff? That was amazing. Very knowledgeable as well. I appreciate him doing that very much. That was really cool. All right. Now, how about this? So, you know, we'll get a celebrity guest like Steve-O on, no problem. That's all well and good. And he was actually pretty easy to book. But my next guest, I swear, I had to bump the president of the United States. He was easier to book than my next guest. It's been like 3 years since he's been on the program because he's so busy. He's all over the place. He's getting all kinds of awards. He's doing all kinds of movies, writing books, all kinds of stuff, television appearances. And like he literally could not carve 20 minutes out of his day. I told Conor McGregor, like, I don't need you this week because I finally got Michael Bisping. Wow. Look at that.
Wow.
In the flesh. Wow. There he is. The great Michael Bisping. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, sir. But listen, you messed up, Ariel, already. I mean, the segue should have been from one jackass to another. Okay. That's what it should have been.
You know,
but you missed a trick there. But flattery will get you everywhere, my friend. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. And what a setup. I mean, like I said, it's been like 3 years since we've talked. I didn't realize you were such a pro at this stuff now.
Well, listen, I have the world's funniest MMA show. You should check it out sometime. Believe you me, if you guys want a good laugh and you don't want to hear Ariel kissing ass and drooling over celebrities, if you want to hear the real take,
yes,
then you got to check out Believe You Me with Michael Bisping and Luis J. Gomez. But of course, you do a good show over there, that little rinky-dink organization called ESPN.
That's right. Michael told me one time, why do I have to go on your show if I have my own show? Like, that's the way the mind works now. That's the ingrate that he's become. But we still love him, and I'm happy. And, of course, you come on once you have something to promote, once you have something to hawk. Like, you won't just come on just to, you know, shoot the breeze with an old mate. It's because you're now an author, an accomplished author.
Ariel, I see you all the time, so I can talk, I can shoot the breeze, I talk, I text you, you never respond.
I don't
come on your show just to catch up. This is business. This is, you know, yes, I do have something to promote and tell the people about. It is this remarkable book, Quitters Never Win, written by myself and my good friend Anthony Evans, a labor of love. That is my life story. Some highs, some lows, some things I'd rather not share, but it's an honest take on what went on over the years in the UFC and prior to the UFC. And that gets released this week, my friend. What did you think, Ariel? Have you taken a look?
I have taken a look. I think it's phenomenal. You know, I think very highly of Ant Evans, formerly of the UFC. I noted that I think you and him and Marshall Zelaznik are solely responsible for building the UK market back in the day. You guys were a great team. And the book reads like you fly through that thing. I had a chance to read the majority of it and it's just amazing. And your life is amazing as well. And so I want to ask you about something you just said. You were like, oh, some things I'd rather not talk about, but it's all out there. How difficult was it? And I'll get to one thing in particular in a second, but like you really poured it all out there. Like there's a lot of stuff that I've talked to you for like 11 years now and stuff that I never heard you talk about. And you have kids who are able to read this stuff. How difficult was it to put some of that stuff out there?
Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, I guess part of it, what made it so easy was doing the book with Anthony Evans. Obviously, as you said, I worked with him at the UFC and we became good friends over the years. I was speaking to somebody that I knew and had a relationship with. So therefore, I was able to open up and, you know, about certain things and also about my emotional mindset over certain issues. Had it been a stranger, as I said, I probably wouldn't have gone so deep, but me and Anthony have a good relationship. We're very good friends. So as I said, for that reason, I kind of opened up more. There's some things in there that I kind of, you know, maybe wouldn't have shared had I not known Anthony so well. But yeah, there it is. I mean, I'm not sure which things you're alluding to right now. So please
okay. Well, there's
put me out of my suspense, Ariel.
There's one chapter in the book where you talk about spending time in prison. You were arrested and you actually let the cat out of the bag in your Hall of Fame speech. But I did not know this about you. And it's a pretty riveting read that one chapter. You had just, you know, been married very recent. I think your wife Rebecca was pregnant, but had not given birth yet. You were very scared. And this is something, from what I understand, you're quite embarrassed about. You didn't want the world to know this. Why did you end up putting that in?
Yeah, that's right. A lot of people actually said to me, because I did mention it at the Hall of Fame thing, it kind of slipped the tongue there, so to speak, because I knew it was in the book. I knew it was coming out soon. At the time, I was trying to put that behind me. I was trying to become a new person, reinvent myself. Of course, when I was younger, I made a lot of mistakes. A lot of people do. I'm only human. Maybe I made some more than others. Found myself in trouble with the law a few times. I was never a criminal, but I was always quick to get into a fight. Go figure. I became a professional fighter. But yeah, I went to prison. Rebecca was 7 months pregnant. So that was obviously a low point for me and her. And when I became a mixed martial artist, I didn't want that to be the stigma. I didn't want that to be, oh, look at this, another tough guy, another criminal, whatever, coming into cage fighting, because you automatically assume the wrong thing. So I never spoke about that. Of course, I wasn't proud of that. And that was a part of my life or an era of my life that I chose to forget and put behind me and become somebody new. But now, you know, my journey is over. Well, my mixed martial arts journey is over. And I've written a book. You know, it's only fair to tell the truth, warts and all, so to speak.
Without giving away too much, could you tell the people why you went to prison?
Yeah. No, it was a bar fight. I went into a bathroom and my friend was on the floor getting his head kicked in by two people. You know, so what are you going to do? You know, a fight starts and then it spilled outside and it continued out there. And then a guy used a woman as a human shield as a distraction as another guy was inching closer in my peripheral vision. I could see him. Maybe today with my vision being a little messed up, I wouldn't have seen him. But back then I had perfect 20/20 vision and my peripheral was fine. The guy was inching closer with his fist clenched. I knew what he was going to do. And of course, after years of martial arts training, the one thing that I chose to put him down with was a high kick to the head. Maybe a little bit of an overreaction. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. But shin on chin occurred. He went down. The cops pulled up. Long story short, I went to prison for a while.
Wow. What was prison like?
Well, I'm going to surprise you here, Ariel. It was shit. Pardon my language. Listen, it wasn't, you know, I'm not in a rush to go back.
Yeah.
Let's just put it like that. It was terrible. First of all, for some reason, I went to a maximum security prison, 23-hour a day lockup. You got an hour out of your cell a day to walk around in circles. So it wasn't fun, but it taught me some lessons. You know, it really did. The judge that sent me down did me a favor because I realized, you know, you can't go through your life behaving like this, acting like this. So I made some changes, you know, changed my friends, changed my drinking habits, you know, became a better person, Ariel.
Did you only go to prison once?
Yes, of course. Yeah. You know, I'm not a I'm not a career criminal. Arrow.
Well,
Jesus
I don't know.
Christ.
I mean, really, I didn't know you went to prison once, like a month ago. So I just wanted to make sure. I felt like the question needed to be asked.
Well, unfortunately, I was arrested on multiple occasions.
Ah.
Okay, let's just say that. I am not a criminal. I have no criminal record. I'm a good man. That has all passed. The Rehabilitation of Offenders Act, Ariel, came into play. So, yeah, no, listen, you know, there's that in there. There's many, many things. So, yeah, I mean, as I say, I wasn't proud of that. So I kept that quiet because mixed martial arts already had enough of a stigma attached to it. You know what I'm saying? In the early days, journalists wouldn't give it a fair crack of the whip. People never spoke about it as the truly magnificent sport that it is. They were just quick to berate it, call it human cockfighting, two men enter, one man leaves, all that type of business. So I thought, well, geez, if I talk to the media and tell people that I spent time in prison, it's only going to add to those stereotypes. You know what I'm saying? So I kept that one quiet.
Is it true that you actually wanted to be a member of the British Army, but they rejected you because of the prison sentence?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was born on a military base. My father was a sniper in the army. He was a sergeant major. My brother's in the army. My other brother's in the army. So we were an army family. But I did. You know, I left school at 16. Then after a while, you realize there's not many options for an unskilled 16-year-old. So I tried to join the army. My plan was to join the army and become a professional boxer. Get on the army boxing team, then come out and turn professional. A British boxer by the name of Nigel Benn did the same thing. So that was my idea. But unfortunately, the criminal record came back and bit me in the ass, and even the army wouldn't take me.
And did it almost, from what I understand, cost you your UFC career post-winning Tough as well?
Well, I wouldn't say it nearly cost me my career, but it's well, in some respects, yes. So I won the Ultimate Fighter. Then I applied for the American visa, of course. Mm-hmm. And because of, you know, said criminal record, they would issue me a visa. And they actually denied me entry to the United States for the rest of my life.
Wow.
And then in true Michael Bisping fashion, I spazzed out and I tore up the – well, I screwed it up and I threw it on the floor and I was like, fuck. Sorry, pardon my language, sorry.
No problem.
I'm like, crap, I don't believe this. You know, I'd won the Ultimate Fighter. I was excited. I'd turned my life around. And then this came back and haunted me. But then Rebecca came back and she unscrewed the paper and she read it calmly. She says, Michael, it says here at the bottom that you can appeal these, you know, things. So I'm like, oh, really? Okay. So I had a glimmer of hope again. So I appealed and, you know, as we know, I went on to become – at one point, the winningest fighter in the UFC, first and only British champion. So come on.
Yes. Well, imagine you didn't marry Rebecca. You'd probably have never done all that. You would have thrown that piece of paper out and been a nobody.
I don't know if I'd have been a nobody, Ariel. Come on. Geez,
a club fighter. Down. A club British fighter, you know, fighting on the local scene, so to speak. Certainly not.
There's a way.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why the title of the book is Quitters Never Win. Very apropos.
Yeah, no, it really is. You know, I mean, because the story of the book and the reason I put, you know, the prison stuff and all the rest of it, you know, in there is because, you know, nothing was ever easy and nothing in this life, if you want it, if there's great reward, comes easy. You know, and everybody has to go through obstacles at some point. Everybody gets told no. Everybody, you know, things don't always go your way, you know. So, but if you don't give up and you work your ass off and you've got a good dedication and you're lucky enough to have some decent people around you, then you can achieve certain things in life, you know. So yeah, I mean, I guess that's the moral of the book.
I'm surprised that you didn't ultimately go with Conceive, Believe, Achieve as the title.
That would have been a good one. It would have been a good one. But that's the intro to my podcast, you know. So you can't – I don't want to flog a dead horse.
Again, I'm not – I'm giving – we're talking about 1% of the whole thing. But true or false, in the list of your accomplishments somewhere in the book – and it's a phenomenal read. It really is. There haven't been a lot of great MMA books out there. Let's be honest. I would put this one right at the very top of the list. It's really great. And I do think the connection that you have with Ant helps a lot. But true or false, does it not say somewhere in that book, in your list of accomplishments, unofficial Strikeforce middleweight champion?
It does. At the end, there's a stat page and it has unofficial Strikeforce champion. And that was Anthony Evans again. You know, I mean, obviously that's a throwback to the Luke Rockhold thing.
Yes.
This is how this whole thing with Luke Rockhold started. I went on a TV show, I forget the name of it now, and they asked me how a sparring session with Luke went, and I said, well, put it like this. I'm now the unofficial Strikeforce champion. So that's how it all started. He got offended, and yes, that is in there. on a long list of accolades, Ariel. I mean, you know, we had to cut back on the accolades. You know, we were running out of pages. The publishers were like, there's too many accolades, too many awards. We can't possibly put them all in. But we left that one there for comedy value.
I had the privilege of watching, you know, one of my favorite things to do is, you know, they don't let me mingle with the talent all that often. I mean, let's be honest, I kind of get sequestered, but sometimes I get to watch the fights with you guys, and we had the privilege of watching the Rockhold Błachowicz fight together. And I was like, wow, is it like, aren't you so happy to see this? And you actually said to me that you felt bad for Luke Rockhold. And I couldn't believe, like, I think that was an indication that maybe you've grown up a little bit. Why do you feel bad for Luke Rockhold after everything that has happened between you two?
No, listen, at one point we were linked together and we were rivals. Simple as that. But those days have gone. I'm not even fighting anymore. So not only is he not in my weight class anymore, but I don't compete anymore. So I don't look at Luke as a rival. You know, I look at him as a human being and I wish him all the best. I really do. Listen, was he a bit of a tool in the lead up to our fights? Yes. Did he give me tons and tons of ammo to use and make everybody laugh? Yes, he did. And for that, I will thank you. And did he fall foul to the power of left up Larry? Yes, he did magnificently. And I thank you again for that. So why on earth would I be mad at this person? You know, no, I wish him the best. Listen, I admire the skill it takes to knock somebody out. I never enjoy actually seeing somebody not get knocked out. And certainly someone like Luke, that had such a great career, to be knocked out three of his last four. You know, listen, I know what that feels like to lose, you know, so I don't take pleasure in seeing that. I really don't. And I wish him all the best. If he continues to fight and prove everybody wrong, that would be amazing. And if he retires and hangs it up, then God bless him.
I remember seeing BJ Penn the weekend that he was being inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame. And I said, congratulations and all that. This is a few years ago. And he's like, I don't feel retired. I don't feel like this is happening at the right time in my life. And of course, we know he came back. You just got inducted. You're being celebrated as a retired fighter. Do you feel retired or do you sometimes get that itch again?
No, I definitely feel retired. Okay. I mean, I still look after myself. I still work out more than what I did than when I was fighting, actually. Ironically now, because I don't have training camps to get in shape, I look after myself more these days. But if you read the book, you'll hear all about, you know, the issues I had with my eye and things like that. So that's definitely why I'm retired. I can't fight anymore. I had issues. I've got a bad eye and I've got a good eye. And then I started having issues with my good eye. And, you know, fighting was fun and I enjoyed it and I was passionate about it. But believe it or not, I don't want to go blind from it. And a friend of mine, Jason Falovich, that I run Playline with, he said to me, he said, Michael, because I was going to fight Rashad Evans, if everyone recalls, in London in 2018, last year. And he said to me, he said, Michael, what are you doing? He said, if you went blind, I said, well, listen, I want to get one more payday. I want to say bye to the British fans. You know, I want that. You know that moment that you kind of romanticize in your head where you get to say, you get to thank everybody on the microphone. You put your gloves down in the octagon and all the rest of it. I thought after all this time, I kind of deserve that. But he said, yeah, but what if you go blind? What if you go blind, Michael? He said, wouldn't you give all the money in the world to get your vision back? And I was like, yeah, of course I would. So, yeah, so I don't fight anymore. I don't miss it. It was great. It set me up. It enriched my life in ways I would never imagine. And now, you know, I'm on to bigger and better challenges.
Anything in the book that you had to talk to your kids about that you wanted them to hear from you before it was out there in print?
Yeah, the prison thing.
Oh, they didn't know?
I mean, of course. No, they never knew. I always kept that from them.
Wow.
You know what? You know what? Hey, guess what, guys? That is a criminal.
But
Daddy,
I mean, you're
Daddy, like, dropped the soap in the shower on many occasions and no one fucking came near.
Good on you, but how old are your kids? Like 16, 17 years old, right?
I apologize for the swearing. 18, 16, and 9.
Like Callum didn't know, the oldest.
Yeah, he had no idea. Wow. He had no idea. I told them recently, not just because of the book, but also because, you know, they're going out into the big wide world. Callum's off to college soon. And I want them to know that little mistakes that you think, that you don't think through, you know, a loss of temper or whatever, can follow you around for the rest of your life, you know, and cause issues. And I think it's a valuable lesson that people need to know, you know. And it's one thing to sit there on your lofty perch at home and lecture them. But if you can say, look, listen, I know I made these mistakes. Look at what happened to me. You know, I think it just help send that message home a little stronger. And of course, it was going to go in the book anyway. Yeah. So someone's going to tell them eventually.
How did they react?
No, they weren't surprised. Where's the fans? Yeah, Dad, we kind of noticed that every time we're coming through the country, you have to go off to secondary inspection by yourself.
Oh, my.
So kind of figured it out, but whatever.
All right. Okay. I want to ask you this, Michael, before I let you go, because I know you have your great podcast coming up in a matter of moments there. Believe you me, with the great Luis J. Gomez. I've been talking all show long, and for the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about Leon Edwards. You are the most famous British mixed martial artist of all time. You won the belt. You've sold out arenas. You are the man, right? Everyone loved your journey. They wanted to be a part of your journey. They were emotionally invested. This man, Leon Edwards of Birmingham, has won 8 in a row and can't seem to get the people behind him, can't get that support. What is he doing wrong? Do you have any advice for this man?
I don't think he's doing anything wrong. I think he's doing everything perfect, to be honest. He's 8-0. Well, not 8-0, but he's on an 8-5 win streak in the UFC in the welterweight division, which is incredibly hard to do. He's a good person. He puts on great fights. He's exciting. I mean, look at his last few fights. Dos Anjos.
Gunnar Nelson. Donald Cerrone. Yeah,
Donald Cerrone. There's some great names on there, you know. And this man right now would be my bet for England or Britain's next UFC world champion. I think he's got a great shot of achieving that. And yeah, just keep doing what he's doing. Listen, he was kind of on the undercards for a while. So some of those wins, he wasn't getting the public weren't really taking notice. But I think they're taking notice. Now you're talking about him. He was in a main event at the weekend. He's taking on guys like, who did he just fight Saturday night?
RDA.
RDA, Gunnar Nelson. Once you start beating people like that, people are going to take notice real quick. And he's got a great style. My only problem with him is that he's now calling himself Left Elbow Larry. Left Elbow Larry. What is all that about?
No. I missed that.
On Instagram yesterday, he put a post and he called himself Left Elbow Larry.
Well, isn't that paying homage to you? I feel like that's respect, no?
It is, but he should call himself Left Elbow Leon. It sounds way better.
That's right. That's right.
Left Elbow Leon. You know, leave the Larry. Larry's taken, okay? Elbow Larry. Don't make me come out of retirement.
Okay.
No. Listen, I'm joking. No. Leon is fantastic. And as I say, I think he's the best chance we got of another UK champion. He's doing great. So, yeah.
Does he have to be more colorful, more, you know, braggadocious?
Not really. Some people are, some people aren't. If that's not his style, then don't do it. Don't force it. Don't fake it. You know, let his fighting be talking, which he is doing right now.
I think it would be great. He fights Jorge Masvidal. And of course, we know about your feud with Masvidal. And you walk him out to fight Jorge. You send him off to battle to settle your beef with Jorge Masvidal. Whoa.
There's no beef with me and Masvidal. We're like best buds these days. Sure. It's crazy. We're going down the park together. We're walking the dogs. We're grabbing ice cream. You know, there's no beef.
Okay.
This is one of life's true love stories, Ariel.
I know. I saw it with my own two eyes in Las Vegas. It's
in fact,
amazing.
He's coming on Believe You Me. Can you believe this? He's coming on my own show.
When?
Did I just show?
When?
Zero beef. Well, it was supposed to be this Thursday, but I'll be in England promoting the book, so we've got to reschedule. But
wow, you canceled on Jorge Masvidal, the hottest fighter in the game right now?
Whoa. I'm not canceling. My producer went ahead and booked it for Thursday.
Oh.
He doesn't know. I'm a very busy man.
Okay.
I've got places to be. I'll be on an international book tour, Ariel. International.
Well,
I mean, Jesus Christ.
Speaking of which, I do believe we have some. Look at that, Mike. Look at that. Look what we do for you. July 25th, in 3 days, at the Blue Water Shopping Center in Kent. Where's Kent? I've never heard of Kent before. Is that a nice place?
It's a beautiful part of the country, Ariel. Just outside of London, southeast.
Okay, and then also July 26th at 6:30 at the Waterstones in Trafford Center in Manchester. I've heard of that place. This is amazing. So you're going to be signing books there, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm actually really excited about that. More so, I mean, don't get me wrong, to everybody in Kent, I'm looking forward to that. But last time I was at the Trafford Center, we did a signing after I won the belt. And I was kind of nervous because I thought, wow, nobody's going to show up. But literally thousands of people showed up. It was insane. It really was. It was a great experience. Now, I'm not expecting that same thing, but I just know that last time I was at the Trafford Centre, it had a great memory. So I'm looking forward to going back. But in Kent, and I'll be doing the rounds on radio and some TV shows as well. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see how it goes. I mean, I was very nervous about the book. There's so much in there that I didn't want to talk about, like the prison thing, like a lot of stuff about my childhood, and obviously my emotions, you know, after you lose fights and things like that. So we went in pretty deep. So I was pretty nervous about it, but I hope everybody likes it. I appreciate your kind words, Ariel. But we go on sale this week. Fingers crossed.
Yes, and you can get the book wherever you usually get books. People know the spots, Amazon, all that stuff and more. Congratulations on this. I know it's a very big deal. I know it's hard to put everything out there for the world to see. I think you and Ant did a phenomenal job, so well done. And no hard feelings, even though you make me, you know, literally beg for you to come on the show. I mean, you're doing nothing.
Whoa.
You used to come on when you were an active fighter, winning belts before and after fights. Now you're literally doing nothing, and I can't get you on the show. But no hard feelings. I still love you always and forever, Michael.
I wish I was doing nothing. I do this. I do my little rinky-dink show, believe you me, Susan. I'm done. I fly to London tomorrow. I'm on a book tour. I got movies. I got commentating. I got desk shows. I've got books. I run Playline. I've got businesses galore. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
but I still carve out the time. Very busy, busy day for me today. Time is money, Arrow. You know this.
Yes.
But I'm still here for you.
Thank
and
you.
And only you.
I appreciate that.
I mean, I don't get quite the same ass kissing that Steve-O got.
No,
you know?
Of course not. Of course, why would you?
I could hear. I threw up in my mouth a couple of times.
It was great. It was so great.
Calm down.
Listen, you know, when you and Luis Gomez pull
balls head first.
Listen, when you guys pull guests like Steve-O, then we could talk. Okay, Michael.
Hey, listen, I don't need guests.
All right.
People tune in to me and Luis.
Okay.
Me and Luis, the funniest guys in the game. We don't need guests. Guests just bring the show down.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Your game.
Go do your show. All the best to you. It was nice to talk to you again, Michael.
Always a pleasure, Ariel. Keep up the good work, buddy.
All right. There he is. The Count himself. New book is out. You saw it. Kent, Manchester, if you're in the area, go check him out. He'll be there on the 25th and 26th of this week. So in like 3 or 4 days. All right. Let's move along to our next guest. She is co-headlining UFC 240 in Edmonton this Saturday against the great Chris Cyborg, a massive fight for Felicia Spencer, the former Invicta FC featherweight champion. She's kind enough to join us via the magic of Skype. Hello, Felicia. Sorry about that. He likes to talk a lot. I don't know if you know that about Michael Bisping, but he's quite loquacious.
No problem. I enjoyed watching him say goodbye.
Yes, it was like a 6-minute goodbye. But this is a big week for you. And I actually want to start where we ended the last time we spoke, when you were on the show for the first time back in May. Of course, I asked you about the Cyborg fight and you said you're open to it, but it has to make sense financially. You know, you want to be compensated. You're fighting her this Saturday. And so I'm wondering, did you get the deal that you wanted?
Everything worked out great. Yeah. As far as the timing, and I mean, I was partly concerned with timing and other things too. So, you know, once I started thinking about the opportunity, it was hard to pass up. So we definitely came to an agreement and, booked it. I think I signed the contract like 7 days after my meeting win. So,
yeah. So you're happy with everything. You're content.
I'm definitely happy and I'm very excited for this coming Saturday to shock the world.
If I would have told you heading into the UFC that in your second UFC fight, you'd be fighting Chris Cyborg, would you have believed me?
I always thought it was a possibility. I always thought it was a possibility, or I knew that it would be happening, you know, one way or another. I'm happy that it's happening before she leaves the UFC, I suppose. She's always been on my radar. I didn't expect anything going into the UFC. Like, I wasn't sure if I would have a slower rise, you know, if they were going to sign other featherweights or if they were going to have me go straight to the top. So I'm definitely, I was ready for either path that they took me to or gave me. So, I'm ready for it.
What do you say to people who say this is happening too soon, that you're not quite there yet? You shouldn't be fighting someone like Cyborg in your second UFC fight. What's your response to that?
Well, who else is there in the division? Even though, and it honestly, I know that my experience in the public eye in the grand stage hasn't been shown a lot. But I've been training and doing martial arts my entire life. I have the mat time. My cage time doesn't match a lot of the other competitors in the UFC, but my mat time is there or beyond a lot of the roster. You know, I didn't start training when I was 20 years old. I grew up doing it, you know, so I feel very confident for that, to have the muscle memory and just the mindset that it takes to be on the top of my division right away.
So she's coming into this fight almost like a wounded animal because she's coming off a knockout. It had been so long since, you know, she had ever fought. I know, like, I'm going to ask you, what Cyborg are you preparing for? And I know you're going to say, because everyone says, I'm preparing for the best Chris Cyborg. But is there a part of you that thinks, all right, you know, like when a fighter gets knocked out, they're a little different. Perhaps a less aggressive Cyborg. She doesn't want to get caught. She's going to be a little more tentative. Do you think you'll see someone who fights a little differently than the Cyborg we've seen in the past?
No, I don't think it's going to really impact her coming fight. You know, I'm not expecting it to. But we've seen different versions of Cyborg, you know, in the last couple of years even. You know, she's had some fights where she's been more aggressive, but she's also had some really tactical fights and slower paced. She's been in bad positions. You know, even if you just watch her most recent couple of years, she's been in bad positions or positions where she hasn't taken advantage of the situation. And I know, you know, if I'm in certain positions where she's been with some of these other girls, those are positions where I excel. You know, she's been, you know, clinched. She's had her back taken. She's been kicked. You know, all of these things I've been seeing for years, you know, that there's always an opening. Everyone can be beaten, myself included, which is why I go into every fight with a mindset that I will find a way to win, and also with a healthy respect that I know anyone can be beaten on any given night.
I feel like there was an aura surrounding her, especially over the last few years, like some opponents were mentally defeated even before the fight. Do you feel like that aura is gone because we just saw her getting knocked out?
That's hard to say. I can't imagine myself having ever, you know, wanting to, or ever feeling that way before I would have fought her. Maybe some people feel that aura is gone. To me, she's a legend no matter what. And her last fight doesn't tell me. I don't look much into it. It's so short. You know, if it was a long, drawn-out fight where she got dominated, that would maybe look a little different. But it was just a situation where I can't really draw much from that performance, other than it just being very motivating, you know, for her. I know you said it's a cliche, but I'm definitely ready for the best Chris Cyborg that there's ever been.
Are you relishing the opportunity to potentially kick her out of the UFC? Is this something you alluded to it moments ago? But, you know, she is on the final fight of her contract, and this is a big storyline heading into this fight. Is that a spot that you want to be in?
You know, I don't want to, like, kick her out of the UFC, but, you know, it's known, like you said, that kind of the drama or just the spotlight of her position in her contract. So it's something that's there, you know. Who knows what she's going to do after. Honestly, the way I'm looking at it is I'm just grateful that I get an opportunity to fight her before she's gone, or if she leaves, you know, I might have missed out on this opportunity. So who knows where her head's at, as far as the contract is concerned. But, you know, I know there have been a lot of people talking about her next fight as if this fight wasn't happening. So, you know, whatever plans are being made, I'm just here to spoil that party.
What about this rumor that came about maybe like 2 or so weeks ago that the fight was off and that Nunes was being discussed? I think that you weren't very happy about that. What happened there?
There was just some, I don't even know what news site put out that Spencer was out, Nunes was in, and it got shared a few times. So honestly, the only thing that I think that got me a little bit frustrated is I was just working, going about my day, just busy working, and then all of a sudden my phone blows up with everyone that cares about me, like, what's wrong? What happened? Like, why are you out of the fight? What happened? So my phone blowing up while I'm trying to be a productive during my day was just like, why would anyone share this? You know, especially Cyborg or whoever runs her account shared it, so it just made it really blow up because she's a, you know, it was supposed to be a reliable source of information about her fight. So her sharing the information just was like, why would you do that? You're just making my day a little complicated now. I don't take it personal. I think I posted that it was a little disrespectful, but honestly, I don't care either way what she wants to say or what she wants to share on her social media. So, but yeah, that was something that happened, and you know, I'm here and I'm fighting her on July 27th. So that's all there is to it.
So the last time we spoke, you kind of broke my heart a little bit when I tried to build you up as like the next great Canadian, you know, superstar. You were going to be our savior, all these things and more. And then you were like, well, I didn't really spend all that much time in Canada, but you're still very proud of your Canadian roots. Well, here you are co-main event in Canada. Like of the four fighters at the top of the card, you're the lone Canadian, and I do believe this is your first time fighting in Canada. So this is a pretty big deal. Like, are you gonna bust out the Canadian stuff this week to try to get the fans really behind you?
Yeah, you know, I'm definitely running with my heritage, and it's awesome that I get to fight in Canada. I mean, I haven't even ever been to Edmonton before, and I grew up visiting around the Montreal area, a little bit of Ontario. So going out to Alberta is like just something I've heard my parents talk about, you know, with their experiences. So I'm really excited to get to represent, you know, in Canada and hopefully have a few extra cheers in the audience. And just kind of get to, you know, rekindle that flame and, you know, get to meet Canadian fans who are, you know, happy to call me a fellow Canadian.
Yes. I have a feeling they'll get behind you. I'm curious to see what the reception is like. And obviously this is a very important fight for multiple reasons. We spoke about some of them, but also because a title shot could be on the line. So we just saw Jermaine Durandamy, 2 weekends ago beat Aspen Ladd. And so she has kind of emerged, and I felt like there was like a four horse race, so to speak. And we'll see what happens in your fight. And maybe the person who looks the best moves on. Do you feel like if you beat Chris Cyborg impressively, you could be next for Amanda Nunes? Has that been said to you, or is this something that you're feeling going into the fight?
Nothing's been said to me, but I mean, how could it not be the case? You know, who else would take that title shot? And I know Amanda has, but you know, vocally said that she wanted to defend both of her belts, so it makes sense to me. That would be the next step. So, but yeah, like I said, I haven't heard anything official from the UFC or anything.
When you saw Jermaine fight the way she did and win in 16 seconds, do you feel like the stakes have been raised? Like, now you have to do something to try to out-impress that performance?
No. Honestly, again, the quick fights like that, it's hard to draw much from, you know, how they go. You know, of course, it's impressive and it's awesome. At the same time, I think Amanda Nunes has a lot of pull with what she wants to do next. So really, it's all about her and what, you know, what she wants to do for her next fight. So I'm just going to go out there and be me and win the fight. And I think that'll be impressive enough, you know, in the eyes of a lot of people. And a finish, you know, first round finish would be amazing as well.
Did you think it was an early stoppage?
It's hard to say. You know, I at first I thought kind of, but then, you know, when you see she was kind of turned around, maybe kind of out of it for a second, and then who knows? I wouldn't argue it as like a robbery or anything like that, but I could see it going a little bit longer, but I'm not sure it would have had a different outcome at that point if she was rocked or anything. You know, it could have just been a matter of a few extra seconds, just like anything, but it's a tough call to make, and I'm lucky enough not to have to make that call.
Right. Well, this is a massive spot for you, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's crazy how it's all happened, you know, so quickly or relatively quickly. I'm sure for you, it doesn't feel that way, but as far as your emergence in the sport as a top contender at 145, and now you're fighting Chris Cyborg on pay-per-view. This is wild stuff in Canada, the greatest country on earth, Felicia. Come on, get behind it. Get behind it.
I am. I'm here. I'm going to be there. Yeah, you know, I feel it's very humbling to have the position, you know, to have my second fight in the UFC be in the co-main event spot like this, and on a card with so many people that I respect, and, you know, Max Holloway and Frankie Edgar are fighting the main event, like, and just Chris being on the same card as Chris Cyborg is a huge deal, you know, let alone fighting her. So, yeah, you know, I don't feel any pressure that I don't normally feel, you know, honestly, this is the best start to fight week that I've ever had, and I'm feeling amazing. I wasn't sure, like, back-to-back fight camps would be ideal, but I'm really glad that it happened like this, because I'm feeling just ready to go in on Saturday and just be myself and have a lot of fun.
I wish you the best, Felicia. I'll see you out there in Edmonton. I'm looking forward to it very much. Good luck in the fight on Saturday night. Thanks for doing this.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. There she is. The next great Canadian hope. Felicia Spencer, co-main event, Saturday, UFC 240, Edmonton against Chris Cyborg, potential number one contender fight at 145 pounds. I mean, really it is, but will the winner fight for the belt next? We'll see what happens with Amanda Nunes. All right, let's go back to UFC San Antonio. Last two guests, the first one, You know, that night was kind of just going along, decision, 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 record, 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 decision, decision, decision. And there was Dan Hooker, New Zealand's own, walking into Texas against the fellow Texan. And he knocks out James Vick in 2 minutes and 39 seconds, or was it 33? It was 33. We shortchanged him, and he stopped it all. What a great finish. What a great stoppage. What a great win. What a great performance by the hangman himself, Dan Hooker, who just got off like a 40-hour flight. Right, Dan? I really appreciate you doing this. Thank you so much.
Hey, what's up, bro? Nah, it's not too bad. It was 14 hours. So.
14 hours. And I think it's around 7:45 a.m. over there in Auckland. So thank you so much for doing this a couple hours after you landed. I really appreciate it. Congratulations, my man. What a performance from you. And, you know, one of my big questions going into this fight was, how would you respond from that fight against Edson Barboza? It was such a great performance out of you against Barboza in the sense that you never quit. You kept going, but of course he won the fight, and then you want to see how someone responds from that. How was your confidence going into the fight on Saturday stemming from the Barboza fight?
Yeah, so that was almost 8 months I took away from the sport, and so that's the longest amount of time I've had away from the sport ever since I started training, ever since I first walked in the gym. You know, I fought after 5 or 6 months. So 7, 8 months was the longest amount of time I'd ever had off and not been fighting. So it just kind of relit that flame and relit that hunger within me and gave me a lot of perspective on how far I'd come, you know, being just a kid from New Zealand. And I knew how much I have left in the tank. And it's just after every tough loss I've ever had in my career, you watch the next fight after that, and I always come back with a vengeance.
Why did you feel like you needed this much time off?
More for just the longevity of my career. If I was thinking I only had a few fights left or something, then maybe I would have rushed back a few longer, a lot sooner. But look, I'm what I consider a lifer. Like I'm a fighter through and through. This is what I love to do. This is the only thing that I am truly passionate about. So I want to do this for the next 10 years. So if I want to do this continually for the next 10 years, then I have to, you know, respect the damage that you do take as a fighter and take the right amount of time off. So I took more time than I needed. And that's because of the team around me and my coaches, like Eugene. He did a very good job of keeping me on the shelf and kind of saving me from myself. So a lot of credit to him.
And not to harp too much on that, but that was your 25th pro fight, I do believe. And like the heart that you showed, the fortitude that you showed, I remember being blown away. You know, you're blown away by the win, but you're also blown away by what you did as well, because you just refused to quit. And eventually he got to you, but it was almost painful to watch at times. Was that the hardest thing mentally and physically that you've ever been through as a fighter, having to, like, you just kept coming forward, like almost like a zombie, really kept coming forward, and he was hitting you with some really big shots to the body? It was hard to watch. Have you ever been in a situation like that before?
Maybe to not that extent, but that definitely wasn't my first ass whooping I've ever had in my career. It's just a deal I have with myself, and that's, you know, I can lose. If someone knocks me out, I can live with myself. If I get submitted or I lose a decision, I obviously it still hurts, but I can definitely live with myself. But if I am to quit on myself, then I made a deal with myself a long time ago that if I'm ever in there and I quit on myself, then I feel like it's time that I should walk away from the sport. It's a difficult spot because I'm a fighter that can turn things around in an instant. So even, you know, I've turned fights that I have been losing around in a single shot. So I could see why my coaches knew that I had that kind of thing in me.
Were you in some ways aware of how that night was going on Saturday and how it was sort of moving along at a glacial pace? And I don't even know if you knew that there was history being made because of all the decisions in a row. And like, did you say to yourself, all right, I'm going to be the one to stop all this. I'm going to get the fans excited. I'm going to get a stoppage here.
Oh, I was watching the fights. So they got the TV going out back, and I'm pretty relaxed out back. So I was just watching the fights as they were going. So I was very well aware that it had been entirely decision. So Yeah, that, going out there and trying to finish is not something I have to try and do. That's just naturally comes with my style and the way that I approach the sport. So I knew the fans were in for it. I knew a lot of people were waiting for this fight, and they were kind of holding their breath for this fight. And so I'm glad that I could go there and put on a show.
And it sounds like you really enjoyed San Antonio. Why did you like it so much?
Yeah, it was a cool city, man. Cool people. I guess I like the, you know, kind of Mexican heritage mixed with the American. It was a good mix, good Mexican food, good barbecue, cool people. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Did you get the hat?
The hat, the Mexican hat. No, I got one of.
Did you get a cowboy hat?
This is my hat. No, I didn't get a cowboy hat. I got a Stenson.
Oh, look at you! Wow, well done. You got
class.
That from there?
Class.
Yeah, that is class.
It's a town hat. I think it's a. Paris hats, and George Bush has got a hat from there. Shaquille O'Neal's got a hat from there.
Wow!
So I had to get down and buy myself a hat.
And now Dan Hooker as well. I saw that you said afterwards that you felt added pressure going into this fight. Was it because of the Barbosa loss, or was it because of something else?
Just the amount of time off I had. You know, that much goes into it. You know, I've been focusing on this for 8 months. You put pressure never hurts though. I'm like a reverse fighter. A lot of people have to kind of make themselves get like less nervous or try to calm themselves down. But one of the problems that I've had in my career is I've always needed to make myself nervous or needed to kind of throw pressure on myself to get the nerves going, because I can very easily go into a fight and feel no nerves at all. But when you don't feel any nerves, that's when you perform badly, because you're not sharp and you don't have that kind of adrenaline kicking in. So I like to put a little bit of pressure on myself and make myself get a little bit nervous, and then so I perform a bit better.
So I love the performance. I love the fact that you got the first stoppage, all that and more. But I'm a sucker for, you know, good mic work as well. And I thought what you did and said on the microphone afterwards was phenomenal. Saying to anyone out there, October 5th, I want to be there with my guy Israel Adesanya as he fights for the middleweight title to unify the belt. It was so great. You didn't want anyone in particular, but you knew the date. You knew why you wanted to be there, almost like a soldier wanting to be in there with his fellow soldier. And shortly thereafter, I don't know if you expected this, but there's Ally Quinta, you know, volunteering his services. What did you make of him doing that, and are you interested in that fight?
Yeah, I feel like Ally Quinta is the perfect opponent for that kind of card. I was saying before this, this win over Vic puts me back where I left off before the Barbosa fight. I feel like it rights a lot of wrongs, and it proves that I belong in that top 15 of that division, and I've earned another big shot. So he's the only one I feel like in the top 10 that makes sense without a fight. So the Ally Quinta fight, I think that 100% makes sense.
You think it will happen?
I'll keep my fingers crossed, but, you know, if they're putting on a stadium show down here in my corner of the world, this is that was my fifth fight in the U.S. in a row. So I haven't fought in front of, you know, the Anzac fans, in front of the Aussies, in front of the Kiwis for a very long time. And so there's a lot of people that want to see me in the flesh again, because they know I come down there. They know I put on a show. So I feel like if they're putting a stadium show, giving me a high-ranked guy, a big name in the sport like Ally Quinta, that's going to sell a lot of tickets down those ways. And if they're looking to fill a stadium, that's the exact kind of fight they're going to need to put on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Israel Adesanya, Robert Whittaker, hopefully Alex Volkanovski against the winner of this Saturday's main event, you versus Ally Quinta. I feel like you have something really special there for those fans. The latest I'm hearing is Melbourne. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I'm hearing. I'm pretty confident it's going to be in Melbourne, but they don't tell me anything. Your guess is as good as mine.
All right, fair enough. Also, I understand it's Israel Adesanya's birthday today, right? Or was that? Is it tomorrow? Or is that yesterday now? Because
I think it's yesterday now.
Because of the time difference. That's
it's
right.
In America, yeah. So you can wish him happy birthday.
That's
but
right.
I think I'm too late.
That's right. So I guess you didn't. Does he live? Is he in Auckland as well?
Yeah, he lives in Auckland as well. He'll be at the gym training.
Okay, so I was just wondering if there are any plans to celebrate his birthday. Going to be a big year for him. Did you guys have anything planned?
I think he was in Vegas for the 4th of July. So I think he's had enough celebrating. It's time for him to get his head down and put in work and get ready for Rob.
When did you first meet Israel?
I was actually there for his first MMA fight.
Wow.
That he had as an amateur. I was there. I hadn't met him, but I was watching in the crowd.
Wow. And did you, like, could you tell that this guy was going to be something special, or was it over time that
this is before he ever started training with Eugene, before he ever started, he wasn't living in Auckland at the time. He was living in a small town in New Zealand, Whanganui. And he'd done, I think he'd watched a bit of jiu-jitsu on YouTube before, and he signed himself up for an MMA fight. But he had the same amount of confidence, which he has today, in that fight as well. So he was kind of jumping around and showing off to the crowd, looking all cocky. And then I believe he got held down for 3 rounds because he'd never done a jiu-jitsu class before. But after that, he moved up to Auckland. He started training with Eugene at City Kickboxing, and he's never looked back.
How big of a deal would it be? You know, like, those three fights are put together, and he's fighting, you know, the Kiwi now. I know he's originally from Nigeria, but very proud of where he currently lives and where he grew up, going up against the Aussie and Robert Whittaker and Volkanov. Like, how big of a deal would this card be in that neck of the woods?
Oh, it's a, mate, if you pull it away from this side of the world, it'll just crush people. Like, it has to happen there. I think it sells it out, man. This is going to be the biggest combat event in, you know, Australia and New Zealand history. I feel like it'll be the biggest deal of any combat sport event that's ever happened on this side of the world.
Wow. And for you, like, for you're born in Auckland, correct?
Yep.
And City Kickboxing is in Auckland. What is it like for this gym to now be getting that you're a part of in your hometown? And, you know, here in the United States, we don't hear about a lot of, you know, sporting things from that corner of the world, to now get this international recognition, and your coach, Eugene Behrman, getting this international recognition. Is this somewhat surreal for you to see all the attention that you guys are getting here in America, that little gym in that little country, you know, halfway across the world?
Yeah, well, I guess because I'm in it, and I don't really take like a reflective look at it. I'm not from outside standing in. We've kept the same attitude the entire time. Like, we all just go to training, we do our thing, we all work together, help each other, and it's more just like a family unit where we all just we knew for a very long time that this is what we were capable of. So none of this is really like surprising any of us, and it's all in Eugene's plan. I feel like we're still ticking away at Eugene's plan, and this is all anticipated and kind of calculated for. So nothing at all kind of shocks us, so we don't get blown away by the position that we're in. But we definitely, you know, appreciate all the support we're getting from all around the world.
By the way, why do they call you the Hangman?
I just kept catching a lot of submissions on my way up. I feel like no better way to get a guy out of there than a nice, clean choke early on in the fight. So, yeah, Hangman.
Not bad for a guy who your background is kickboxing, correct?
No, I started in MMA. My first fight I ever had was a professional MMA fight.
Oh, okay.
And then I fought amateur 2 weeks later.
Amateur what?
After professional. I didn't know what they were. I didn't know.
You did professional first, and then you went to amateur?
Yeah, because I was booked for an amateur fight, and then my coach kind of said to me, he's like, oh, do you want to fight next weekend? It's pro. And I said, what's pro? And he said, oh, it's just a fight with no shin pads. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to wear shin pads anyway. So I'd had six pro fights on my record. And then I asked my coach, like, oh, how do I start working on, you know, like, you watch UFC and they have their record show up. I was like, how do you start working on that record? And he's like, you're 3-3, idiot. You've already had 6 professional fights. I was like, oh, this is not how I wanted this to start.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. So some of them you weren't getting paid for, obviously.
I didn't get paid for any of them.
Oh, my gosh. Well, this is not good. So wait, are you saying that we need to eliminate some of those fights? Should we just... Your record should actually be, so the first three where you started 3-3, we should start really from the seventh, correct?
Let's do it. Let's do it. take out all the losses.
Yeah. All right. So you really should be like 18-5 or something like that. Let's be honest. We'll just go with that. Well,
that sounds a little better.
Well, this is great. I'm very excited about you versus Ally Quinta. I mean, the fight isn't nowhere near done, but I'm excited at the prospect of it. And I love the fact that he volunteered. I didn't really see anyone else volunteer, correct?
No, I feel like he's the only guy that put his hands up, and he's the guy that I wanted to put his hands up. So he wants it. I want it. It makes sense. It makes sense for the UFC. The fans are already calling for this fight, so I have no reason why we can't get this done.
All right. We'll see if they make it happen. Thank you very much for doing this, Dan. Great to have you on the show for the first time, and especially after a very long journey home. I really appreciate it. Congratulations on the win. Phenomenal stuff. Congrats on breaking that decision streak as well. Everyone was very happy about that. And looking forward to the next one. Hopefully it is on October 5th.
Thanks, Ariel. Thanks for having me.
All right. There he is. Dan, the Hangman Hooker. What a great win over James Vick. KO win. 3 of his last 4 fights have ended in KO. Prior to that, he had a submission win, then a KO win, has defeated the likes of Russ Pearson and Mark Giacchese, Jim Miller, Gilbert Burns, James Vick. I mean, that's an impressive roster right there. And, of course, had the 1 loss to Edson Barbosa in that stretch. But I agree with him, right back to where he was prior to that fight. So a fight against Ally Quinta would certainly make a lot of sense and would be a huge deal on that October 5th card. They haven't officially announced the location, but it seems like all signs point to it, so we'll see what happens. All right, so let's end the show the way we were supposed to start it. If you have been with us since 1 o'clock, you know that we were supposed to start with Walt Harris. We had some technical difficulties, and he's been kind enough to wait 3 hours to join us. And now let's see if we made it. Oh, this is a much different location. Hello, Mr. Walt Harris. How are you?
I'm doing well, Ariel. How are you, brother?
Oh, this is perfect. Crystal clear. You sound perfect. So, okay, so let's start again. Where was that other spot that you were in?
It's the same spot. I'm on FaceTime right now. I'm in the man cave / my son's little hangout area. We got a little gaming set up in here.
So, okay. Well, FaceTime is much better than Skype, apparently.
It might have been something on my end, low key, because I'm still learning how to use all this stuff, man. We got all kind of crap in here.
No problem. How old is your son?
He's 13.
Okay. All right. So you actually hang out there with him and play video games?
Oh, for sure, man. That's my best buddy, man.
Oh, I love that. I also need to make a correction, because someone on Twitter was very aggressive about this. I said that you are from Jackson State. I meant to say Jacksonville State. So I want to apologize to everyone in Jacksonville State for that error. I would never want to insult anyone. But congratulations on the win. We were talking about, you know, you on this amazing streak here. 2 fights, 62 seconds. You're on a roll in 2019. And, of course, it was important, I think, for you to go on this streak stemming from what happened with, you know, the PED infraction. And you were in the midst of explaining what happened there. So I just wanted to pick up where we left off. Could you explain what happened with that?
Yeah. So, like I was saying, I took a supplement that was labeled improperly. And they found out that I did nothing wrong. I didn't fail any USADA tests, but something showed up for California and NSAC. So, they kind of got together and decided that 4 months was the appropriate thing, for me to, you know, suffer that, suspension or whatever. And, we did it. We took, this suspension, but, I'm taking legal action against the supplement company because they mislabeled their product and, they did that knowingly. So, you know, more to come on that later.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're going the route of, Yoel Romero.
Yeah, for sure, bro. You know, I just feel like, you know, it's not about money for me. It's about my reputation and my name. I work extremely hard to get to where I'm at, and I'm still working. So I don't want anything like that on my record or showing up in my past at all. So,
how difficult was that situation for you? Because clearly you didn't do anything wrong, and now you have to answer these questions. You have to talk to your son, who's very aware probably of what's going on. You don't want to be known as a cheater. How hard was it?
No. It was hard, man, because, like I said, I pride myself on, you know, doing things the right way and being a true martial artist. So for something like that to come up, man, it tore me up, man. I dealt with it. It really hit really hard, man. I'm going to go through all the legal channels to do what I need to do to get my name vindicated.
How did you get over it?
Training, man, and the team around me, my support system. You know, people that really know me know I did nothing intentionally. And, you know, Jeff Nowitzki was there every step of the way, Donna Marcolini. I want to thank them so much, USADA, for helping me go through all the right channels, helping me make sure I had all my stuff situated, and guiding me along in the process.
All right, so now that is over and done with, and I'm wondering if these two performances are almost like you, you know, taking your frustrations out, letting everyone know that you're the man. Has that been used as motivation, and that has led to your performances here?
It's a part of it, man. I got a few chips on my shoulder, but that definitely added to it. I wanted to show the world that I don't need to do anything to be who I am and to do what I've done for majority of my career. You know, I just felt like every fight was definitely a time to show the world that, for sure.
What other chips do you have on your shoulder?
Oh, man, I mean, where do I start? I mean, being from Alabama, first of all, I don't think people give us a lot of respect in MMA. We're a football state. So when people hear Alabama, they instantly go, oh, you know, and they kind of think, you know, they can't be that good. They don't have anything going on down there. So that's one. And then, you know, the situation with Top Team and leaving that gym and kind of feeling underappreciated there. That's definitely added a lot of fuel to my fire at this stage of my career. And, you know, I felt like I've had a few fights in the UFC that should have gone my way. I lost a bunch of close split decisions. And I feel like if you turn the tables in those fights and I got the win, I'm in a whole different place in my career. So every fight is like I'm going in there to prove something, for sure.
For those that don't know, what happened with American Top Team and where are you training out of now?
I'm currently training at home at Spartan Fitness with Eric Anders and, a bunch of good guys. Chris Conley's our head coach. And you know, that's just where I felt I needed to be at that time. It actually kind of happened, perfect for me because my son got sick and I needed to come home. And, you know, Top Team just, I felt like I was being kind of weeded out at Top Team in a way. I felt like I wasn't that important. I felt like I paid a lot of dues at Top Team. I helped a lot of guys get ready for fights. I was a training partner to Bigfoot, to Thiago Silva when he was in the gym, to whoever was ahead of me. I felt like in their career, I was more than ready, willing, and able to go in and help them prepare for their fights. And I felt like when it was my turn, I wasn't getting any kind of special attention that I needed from the people that I was seeking attention from, with the exception of like Dean Thomas, and my strength and conditioning coach, Phil Daru, I felt like I wasn't important. So I just felt like I needed at that point in time in my life to be the center of the attention. I wasn't trying to be the main guy at Top Team. I knew I had to earn that respect. But at the same time, I did feel like I deserved a little bit more attention. So I just made the change and came home.
And prior to which fight did you make that change?
I think it would have been the fight with Daniel Spitz.
Okay. So it's been several now that you're gone.
Yeah. I've been out of there, I think, for four or five fights. And it's weird because since I left, I've been getting nothing but Top Team guys. So,
oh, you think the UFC is doing this on purpose?
I don't know if it's the UFC, if it's Top Team, or it's just the way the division's shaping up. But, I'm down to do whatever. So,
and you're doing well, unbeaten in your last four. So things are going very well. And you mentioned your son again. What was wrong with him?
He had a form of mononucleosis that we didn't detect at first. He had it for a while, and we didn't know what was going on with him, and he kept getting misdiagnosed. And then one of my friends from high school actually reached out to me on Facebook, and she said that she had dealt with a lot of the things that we were reporting, you know, his symptoms and things like that. So I went back to the doctor, and I said, well, could it be this? And she was like, oh, my God, I think that's exactly what it is. And they started giving him medicine for it, and he got better, and he's healthy as an ox right now, so we're happy.
Okay, I'm very glad. So no issues now. He's all good.
All good, man.
Wonderful.
All good.
Okay, great to hear. All right. So I mean, things are going very well for you now, and I mean, you get a win like that, 12 seconds, and you know, Olenek's very respected. He's been in the game a long time. He's tough. He's dangerous. Do you feel like what are the emotions? What are the feelings like when you beat someone that quickly? Do you feel like you got it out of your system on this Monday, or do you feel like you could go back in there, you know, next Saturday and get it out? Like, what is that like since it happened? There's so much buildup to this fight, and then it's over like that.
Yeah, it's a bunch of mixed emotions, man. For one, me and Alexi were training partners for a while I was at Top Team, and I have a ton of respect for that dude, man. He's a great guy. And then, you know, like you said, the buildup to the fight was so much. You know, I've never been in this position. I've never been co-main event. So there was a lot of added personal pressure, you know, outside pressure to go in there and perform. And then to have it happen that way, you dream about it that way. You know what I mean? Like when I go to bed at night, that's how I visualize it. Maybe not in 12 seconds and like the third fastest knockout in UFC history, but definitely wanted to go in there and put on a good performance to get the win. And so I'm happy, man. I'm ready to go. I trained this morning. I'm about to go train again in a couple hours. You know, I'm right back to it like nothing ever happened, honestly.
Who makes sense next?
Everybody that's in front of me makes sense to me. You know, I would love to get the fight back with Abdulrahimov. I felt like I won that one. Blaginov sounds like a good one. Volkanov sounds like a good one. I mean, they all do.
Damn, you want all the Russians?
I want everybody, man. I mean, at the end of the day, man, I'm trying to move forward. You know, I ain't getting no younger. So I'm just trying to fast track myself into that title picture. And, you know, whatever the UFC wants me to do, I'm down to do it, man. Like, I've always been that kind of fighter. I'm game, you know. So, I mean, I think that me taking the fight with Fabricio on like 45 minutes notice will test to that, yeah. You know. So at the end of the day, whatever the UFC thinks makes sense and the fans want, I'm down to do it.
I feel like we need to shoot a little higher here because based off the UFC rankings, Olenek's number 9, I was thinking Derek Lewis, Alistair Overeem. Let's try to get a big name.
I hear that. And, you know, I don't know. I think that Derek was hurt.
He's about to be cleared. I hear any week now he's about to be cleared.
Hey, well, that sounds good to me, man. I mean, I've been hearing that name a lot. Derek's a good one. I'll take Overeem. I'm a huge fan of Overeem. Watched his career for years. So that'd be a great one for me to get in there and, you know, throw myself in that conversation with a win over either one of them.
Yes. I feel like you've earned that kind of fight, that kind of opponent. So, all right. I like that. I wanted to ask you about your days in college. You played basketball at Jacksonville State, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What position?
Everything but the point guard.
Okay. And apparently you had a pretty good career. Didn't you get a tryout with an NBA team?
Yeah, I had three tryouts actually, with three different teams.
Which teams?
The Hawks, the Hornets, or it was the Bobcats at the time.
Okay.
And, the Heat.
Wow. And when you say tryout, like, did you play summer league for them, preseason? What are we talking about?
It was more like a combine showcase camp kind of deal.
Okay.
I thought I did pretty well. I mean, I played against some other, you know, top guys at the time. I feel like I held my own. I don't know if it was just the fact that I was from a small school and I didn't have big representation. I didn't have an agent at the time. I was kind of just, I didn't really know what to do, to be honest. I didn't enter the draft or anything like that. I just kind of went about it, you know, I was going to do the undrafted deal. And it just, you know, it never really worked out for me. And I think everything happens for a reason. Now I'm here.
And in college, like what were your averages, what are we talking about?
I think in college I probably averaged about 15 and 8, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing spectacular.
Not bad.
I was a solid defender, a really good athlete. So I felt like I could develop into something special in the NBA with the right tutelage. But, you know, I never got that opportunity. So I think that, you know, things happen for a reason, like I said, and I ended up in the UFC where I belong.
So back then, like when you were trying out for those teams, did you have any martial arts experience?
None at all. I think the most martial arts I'd ever done was when I was like 8 years old. My mom let me do like 2 weeks of ghetto karate. And that was about it.
What's ghetto karate?
It's where you get taught by like some dude in the hood at the like local YMCA.
Oh, yes.
And
then
he's like breaking boards with his foot and like kicking himself, hitting himself with bamboo sticks. And my mom was like, I don't think this is the move, man. We got to get you out of here. So I started back playing basketball and then the rest is history.
Okay. So how do you go from, you know, collegiate basketball player to MMA fighter? Who brings you over?
So what happened was I stopped, I had the tryouts or whatever. And honestly, man, to be frank, I just dealt with depression for 2 years after that. And in the meantime, my wife got pregnant and we had our son Asa. And then it was just like, man, I looked in the mirror and I wasn't happy. I was like, man, you're like 310 pounds. Like you have sleep apnea. You know, I was doing a lot of things. I had no business. And so I just picked it up one day and just said, man, I'm gonna go to the gym and like start working out. I went to a local Gold's gym and an elderly lady came up to me while I was lifting weights and she was like, have you ever fought?
What?
And she introduced me to my former coach.
Wow.
And he was like, come take some classes on Saturday. And I started doing like mitts and you know, boxing and stuff. And then it just kind of snowballed, man. I started winning. I went 24-1 as an amateur. And then I turned pro, and it was just like win, win, win. And then I started hearing people saying UFC, UFC in the crowd. And I was like, well, maybe I can, you know. So I got an agent, and then that's when the stuff started, man. And
wow.
And I'm still here.
What a story. How depressed were you?
Bad, man. It was the hardest part of my life.
Wow.
To that point, because I had played basketball my entire life. It had given me everything, you know what I mean? And for it all to kind of be over with and me not know what the next move was, man, it hit me pretty hard. And so, yeah, I dealt with that, and I fought through it. And martial arts actually helped me pull out of that depression. It taught me, you know, discipline. It showed me that, you know, there's an outlet for things outside of basketball, and it helped me to get healthy. And I think that's what, you know, my statement is to kids, man, don't ever give up, you know, keep pushing.
Wow. I bet you never could have ever imagined that mixed martial arts of all things would turn your life around, right?
Bro, never, bro. I was a class clown in high school. You know what I mean? Like I was the kid that if I had to fight, I would fight, but I would try to joke my way out of fights.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like I was never the type to be aggressive or, you know, want to look for a fight or anything like that, but you know, it's funny how things work, man. You know, it's a mindset. And I guess, you know, you think it, you become it. So that's what happened.
Well, I think we saw a part of that. You were rocking the Davy Crockett hat on the post-fight show next to Tyron Woodley.
Yeah.
That was phenomenal. Where'd you get that? In San Antonio?
Yeah. So we went down on the Riverwalk, and I popped in one of the little shops. Shout out to Miss Diana. I forget the name of your store, but she hooked me up with a couple of them, hooked my team up with a couple of them, gave us some discounts and stuff. And I was like, man, why don't I rock this? Like, you know, I was trying to find a time to do it. I was like, well, I'm going to do it if I win, or when I win, I'm going to wear it in the press conferences and all that stuff after the fight. And it went off.
It looked
well,
good.
I guess.
It looked good.
I appreciate it.
You rocked it well, my man.
Thank you.
Next to Woodley, and Juan Adams next to Woodley is like the funniest thing. I don't know why he looks so small next to you guys. Like, he's not that small, but it's just like the visual, and especially the visual of you wearing the hat next to him was phenomenal.
Yeah, man. T Woods, my man, man. That dude's a good dude, man. He still owed me a game of spades, though, man. He talked all that trash on the TV, and we never got it in. So, T Woodley, if you see this, man, I'm ready whenever you
call
are.
Call him out. Yeah, that's right. And by the way, I got to give you props on your name now. Is it short for Walter?
Yes, it is.
Okay, my second son is named Walter, so I love
that.
That's
what's up.
Yeah,
that's what's up, bro.
Why don't you
shout
rock the whole thing? Why don't you rock Walter Harris?
It's a long story, bro. Like I'm gonna write a book one day, but
okay.
It's kind of got something to do with my dad. My dad's name was Walter. You know, he was in and out of my life for a long time, and when I started going by Walt as short in high school, I think it was more or less to like spite him.
Okay,
and so it just kind of stuck, and then I just kept calling myself Walt. But yeah, Walt, my coach was like, why don't you go with Walter? It sounds more distinguished. And I was like, yeah, I don't
you're
know.
Walt.
But I mean, it's Walt, man. It's
wow.
Easy.
There's a lot of layers to you, Walt. I didn't know this.
Yeah, man. I got a pretty deep backstory. I try not to like talk about it too much. I try to keep positive. You know, I've been through a few things in my life, but I think they made me the man that I am today for sure.
Do you have a relationship with your dad now?
No, he actually passed away.
God rest
his soul. You're good, man. We made peace before he passed. So things are good. I know he's looking down, really proud of me. He was like my biggest fan before he passed away. And, you know, I hope I'm making him proud.
Wow. Okay. Well, maybe there is a case to be made for bringing back Walter.
Yeah. It's still in the works, man. I signed my checks, Walter. So.
Oh, okay. All right. That's when it counts.
Yeah.
That's when it matters the most. Well, this has been
a
lot of fun, man. I'm happy that we were able to reconnect with you here. And I apologize. It's been, you know, I haven't had you on the show before, and I feel like that's been my mistake. So,
no, it's all good, brother. I'm honored to be on, man. I really, really appreciate it. I'm a big fan, bro. Big fan.
Thank you so much, and I wish you continued success. Congratulations not only on this win, but the run that you've been on as of late, and I hope you get one of those big names next. I think you deserve it.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. And hey, man, sorry about your Knicks, dog, man.
It's all good.
Hey.
Who are you a fan of?
See, I'm from Alabama, so like I kind of can bounce around because we don't really have a team.
That's right.
But I'm a D-Wade fan. Like, he retired, so I'm kind of up in the air on who I'm going to support.
You're a free agent.
But I'm going to be watching. Yeah, I'm a free agent, man. I'm going to be watching every game this year, though, because the league's got balance again.
It's incredible.
Everything's going to be great. And I also want to say one thing, if you don't mind.
Please.
EA, put me in the game. Oh. Please.
What?
Please put your boy in the game.
They haven't put you in the game yet?
Bro, I have not been in the game, have not been called about the game.
That's why.
Nothing, bro. I need that. I need that to solidify my happiness in the UFC and the gold belt, of course.
Absolutely.
But like,
no, forget the gold belt.
I'm a gamer.
Let's go. Yes. What are they? I mean, they have everyone in the game. You're knocking guys out in 12 seconds.
Come on, man. Third fastest knockout in UFC history. I think some DLC. I throw me in the DLC and I'll download it and we'll be all good.
Electronic Arts, EA Sports, if you're listening, get this, man. Get the big ticket in the game. One last thing. Why do they call you the big ticket?
My mom actually came up with that, man. She jacked it from Kevin Garnett. Shout out KG.
Oh, I love that. Wow.
Yeah, she said that she had a vision and a dream of me selling out arenas one day. So she was like, go with the big ticket. I used to be the assassin. And there was like 450 in a database I saw one time. And I was like, I can't be everybody else. So I want to do something a little different. KG's retired, you know. So I'm going
to
go with this.
Great. Well, one day you are on your way to selling out those arenas. Next will be the video game. Then it will be the arenas. Big name opponent, heavyweight title. And it all started here on my show. I can't really claim that.
Man.
I can't claim that, but I'll still claim it anyway. Walt, you're the
Hell
man.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Continued success, and we'll talk to you soon.
Later, brother. Thank you.
All right. There he is, Walt Harris. Wow. How much fun was that? That was great. Great to talk to Walt Harris. I really enjoyed today's show. That was a lot of fun. All right. Corporate Jake wants his promo. You know, corporate guy got to pump the corporate stuff. UFC 240 before we go. Thank you very much to Walt for sticking around there. That was a lot of fun. So there it is, my friends. We're off to Edmonton. Ooh, a little music. This is not exactly... No, I like the music. I mean, it's not exactly Edmonton music per se, but I enjoyed it. Well, there you go. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh. Some interesting names on the main card. Olivier Aubin-Mercier. How about the Jeff Neal, Nico Price fight? But to me, it's all about those top two fights. Max Holloway returning from the loss to Dustin Poirier, coming back to defend his title against one of the greatest lightweight fighters. And when I say lightweight, I don't mean 155. Lighter weight, if you will. Fighters of all time, the great Frankie Edgar, the legend, going up against Max Holloway. And the big one at 145, Chris Cyborg versus Felicia Spencer. Main card at 10 p.m. Eastern. Visit ESPNplus.com/PPV to purchase. And there's a lot for you, our viewers, as far as coverage is concerned. But I also do want to mention that this program will be on ESPN Radio at, I do believe, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. So once again, we'll be on during the prelims. It was a lot of fun back at UFC 239. We got to react to the fights that were going on in real time, and we're going to be doing that again. So on ESPN Radio this Saturday, I believe at 8:30, maybe 8 o'clock. I'll have to double check, but we're going to be on so you can watch the fights with me sort of as we talk it through leading up to the main card. We'll also do the pre-show as always, Aaron the Bad Guy, all that stuff and more, Wayne Show, the typical coverage. I'm looking forward to that. Also looking forward to Edmonton Eskimos versus Toronto Argonauts on Thursday night. Okay. Wait, now you want me to keep going? Interesting. I will... Corporate Jake, he's going to take me out back and... Well, it's been a fun show, my friends. As we get ready for UFC 240, let me thank everyone who tuned in. Let me thank all our guests. We flew by this one. Wow, this was a fast one. Let me see. Let me pull up my guests here. Dun, dun, dun. Yes. So, UFC San Antonio. How about those kind words from Michael Bisping to Leon Edwards? Oh, there's my music. I was excited. I had a few more minutes to digest it all. Great words there from Michael Bisping to Leon Edwards. Didn't talk much about the Greg Hardy-Juan Adams fight. It kind of came and went. It was just sort of there. I don't agree that Hardy's going to get a big step up in competition next. I think they're going to keep moving him along slowly, and we'll see how it all turns out. It's certainly one of the more interesting stories that we've seen in the UFC thus far. We'll see how it plays out for Greg Hardy. All right, we're out of time. Thank you very much to Mark Goddard. Thank you very much, and congratulations to Leon Edwards. Thank you very much to Miles Jury. Thank you very much to Chad Mendes, and congrats on a phenomenal career as well. Thank you very much to Ioane on Jacek. Good luck to her on October 12th, my wedding anniversary. Thank you very much to the great Steve-O. How great was that? Congratulations on the book to both Michael Bisping and my dear friend Ant Evans. Thank you very much, and congratulations to Felicia Spencer. Thank you very much to Dan Hooker, and congrats to him as well. Hope you get that Ally Quinta fight. And once again, thank you very much and congratulations to the great Walt Harris. If you missed anything, check it out. YouTube.com/ESPN MMA. Check it out. Twitter. Check it out. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all those places and more. We're off to Edmonton, and we're back next week, same time and place, until I say peace. I'm out of here.